Today's Sunday session is brought to you thanks to the fine folks at More Beer. Visit them right now at morebeer.com.
I was pouring in my mouth and it just wasn't going down.
My first beer was an IPA, the best IPA I've ever drank, mostly because I brewed it.
If you have a scale that is good for measuring cocaine, you're probably good for measuring hops on cocaine.
You're scaring me.
I think the information is awesome and the audio sucks.
Make some sugary water, throw some yeast in there, and you're going to drink good beer.
Yeah,
it's going to be good.
Beer is fine.
God damn it, man.
Oh, my God.
Oh, uh-oh.
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Okay, so we have a cool show for you guys tonight. We have Jesse and Phil from Almanac Brewing Company. They're a local brewery. They're a gypsy brewery, and I'm pretty stoked to talk to them about that. But before we get to that, I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer. You can get absolutely everything you need to make great beer at home by going to morebeer.com. They support this show. They support a lot of our shows. They've been doing this show since day one, and we wouldn't be here without them. We can't thank them enough for doing everything in their power to keep us on the air for great radio like you just heard, I'm sure. It's very exciting. Very exciting for me to say things. Support those who support us. You'll hear a few words over the program over the next couple hours. We literally wouldn't be here without them as well. So buy some stuff from them. Support the people who put us on the air, man. We really appreciate it. We've been around for 11 years, and a lot of it is due to support of our sponsors, but most of it is due to you guys supporting our sponsors. So we really appreciate that. Last but not least, there's a big-ass festival in Norway, their third annual beer fest. It's called the What's Brewing Fest. It's being held from October 20th to the 23rd, and Justin and Tasty will both be up there. That should be pretty cool. I'm still bummed out that I'm missing that festival, but I think Tasty is a better proxy. He'd have much more fun than I probably would hanging out up there in Norway.
Haven't you been there before?
No, I haven't been there.
Oh, I thought you did a collaboration with a brewery up in somewhere down there.
No, not yet.
Oh.
I'm going to be doing one.
I thought you did.
No,
You've done a couple, like, remote collabs, though, right?
Remote collab.
Are we making that up?
An email collab.
Yeah.
With Thomas Franson and Mamo Sweden.
Oh.
IPA once. And then,
what's the difference between Sweden and Norway? Besides, like, different letters and shit.
Well, Malmo, Sweden is like 35 minutes from Copenhagen Airport.
They're different countries.
Yeah.
But they're like, I mean, that's like, isn't it like Pacheco and Martinez? They're kind of the same city, but not really. How far apart are they? Do we know?
No.
They're far away from here.
They're far enough away. That's true.
Anyway. Yes, I'll be there.
Well, that's cool. Are you going to be doing any brewing while you're over there?
Just a collaboration in Malmo, Sweden, and then Tukka Nyan from Outland, and he wants me to fly to Paris to do one with him.
Oh, yeah.
Justin's
okay.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. The guy who's been here a couple times?
Yeah.
Okay. He's a nice man.
That'd be cool. What are you going to make?
Some sort of dank beer at Malmo Brewing Company.
Okay.
And I'm probably the Tasty beer that he has a beer called Tasty. In Paris, that he brews. So I'll probably brew that with him.
Is it called Tasty in Paris? Because that sounds like a romance novel.
It's called.
And
Tasty.
I kind of want to read it.
I don't know how that flies in Europe, but
okay.
Yeah, it's got my Tasty logo on the bottle.
Yeah, but it's called Tasty in Paris.
Yeah, it's in Paris.
Okay. I just
that's weird.
Are you confused? I just want to be clear. The name of the beer is called Tasty in Paris.
No. It's called
Tasty, and it lives in Paris.
I understand that it's brewed by a French company in Paris. I understand that, but I was clarifying the name. Can we change it? Let's call Yann and tell him to change it to Tasty in Paris because I like that better.
Well, it might be better. Actually.
Doesn't
you
it sound
put
like
a little beret on your little sticker?
No problem. I'll get my artist right on it.
I think that'd be awesome, actually.
No, dress him up like a fucking mime. Put the white face on with that's the striped shirt and the beret.
I was a little uncomfortable. My logo is being used in Paris. I'll just have a different one for each country.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm getting this.
Instead of a beard, have the little like mustache.
pencil
mustache.
Yeah, just look online for like every stereotypical thing from every country you're going to be. Kim is in here, by the way. Kim, would you want to have a seat? You look uncomfortable standing.
He could hold a baguette and a croissant.
Let me get you some headphones.
She doesn't need headphones. She can hear just fine, right, Kim?
Everybody,
let's take a few calls.
Yuck. Caller.
You have a question for Kim.
Oh, Kim. Oh man, Kim. How do you respond to the caller?
Whoa.
Hi, caller.
There's no caller. Fooled you.
Wow. Who are you talking to?
Yeah, Warren just fooled you, dude.
Isn't everyone a caller in life, though, at some point?
I don't know what to say. I don't know how to answer that question.
Ignore it.
Kim just had a birthday. Didn't you do a bunch of weird shit? Were you, like, off, like, on the moon or something? Weren't you doing stuff?
I got my first tattoo.
Oh, how did my face look rendered in black and white on
it's
flesh?
Tasties. Come on.
Oh, shit.
You should have known better.
Yeah, right.
Go big.
So you got the portrait we drew of your boyfriend tattooed on you?
Too soon, Warren. Come on. Why aren't you plugged into the
I thought it was her dream. Like, her husband is who we drew.
Oh, yeah. The pinnacle.
Yes.
Yes.
Her dream husband.
Right. I think that's what you saw for me. Not yes. My dream.
Yes.
It's what you hope that I end up with.
Yeah. Well, because, like, most people would say, oh, she desperately needs a guy with a hook for a hand. And we said, no, an anchor. And I think that was, we're going next level for you.
I did like the boomerang dildo.
Well, it has to come back to you.
All mean, day, every day.
Really, right? Anyway. No, but you went to, like, Nashville or something.
I went to Nashville earlier this month. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's amazing.
Is it? Still
not
there,
the biggest beer town, but they call it Nash Vegas there. So it's basically like,
of course they do.
You can do a drinking game of how many bachelorette parties you see. It's kind of ridiculous.
Really?
Yes, and they're all in their matching outfits. Like, they are either rhinestone outfits or hot pink outfits, and there are groups of them.
As they should be.
Wow.
Well, so it has nothing to do with casinos not being there.
Lots of music. Lots of cheap drinks.
Oh, okay.
And cowboy boots, which women love. That's a thing. I mean, myself included. I don't know why, but there's a thing about it.
Did you buy a pair of cowboy boots?
I already owned a pair of cowboy boots.
You got fat ankles. It certainly hides it. That's for sure.
I went in prepared.
Yeah. It gives you good support for line dancing.
Yeah.
Good ankle support.
I will be honest with you. There's something about cowboy boots that has always interested me, and I really want to buy a pair. So every time I'm like at a store, it sounds weird, but like a vintage store, because I'm super hip,
right?
And I see like a bunch of cowboy boots for like $25, like $30, and they're all broken in and whatever. And I'm like, I think I might try to, I don't even put them on because I would feel too uncomfortable because I'm not like a cowboy. You're not a cowgirl. How do you settle with that?
You know, I don't know. I have multiple personalities, so it must accommodate one of them.
Is this clinical or is this just like
self-diagnosed?
Okay. Oh. All right. Fair enough. But Nashville was cool. Not the biggest beer town.
Not the biggest beer town.
That's too bad.
They have some fun breweries. I went to a few. But it, you know, just like everywhere else, it's growing. You see some places that are pretty big that have been there for a while that are getting people into it, like Yazoo. That was a really fun experience.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Which I see they're going to be on the Sour Hour.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I mean, of course. We know everything that's going on here at the Brewing Network.
I looked at the Google calendar. So.
Oh, yeah, I don't do that.
They're recording on the 19th.
Boom, there you go.
Boom, fooled you again. Well, that's cool. And they had good beers. I've heard of them. That's Brandon. Isn't that what the
yes,
fuck is
look,
that guy?
I know they're going to be here. Yeah. I don't know anything else.
Yeah, no, he's when like a listener.
Here?
He's like a being dude.
October?
I've talked to him a few times about getting him on.
We can look up his name.
I'm going to do it right now because I'm very confused.
We're actually Facebook friends. I should know this.
Yeah. Jones. Yeah.
You know all your Facebook friends' last name?
Not the married ones. Screw them.
Brandon Jones, yeah, he was, yeah, he's a BN guy, I think. I don't know, I'm friends with him on Facebook, but I don't know, I've never met the guy.
God, you
It's one of those things, right? Well, that's cool. That'd be, I've talked to him a bunch of times about getting him on this show. Apparently, he's too good for us. We're not the
people
new kid.
People skip right over this one, just go straight to the Sour Hour.
Yeah, or maybe he's just more free on Wednesdays instead of Mondays.
Maybe that's
what it is. Do you really think it's the latter one?
I think it's a scheduling thing.
Do you?
I like how Warren thinks today. Yeah. Right now, at this moment in time, whenever it has to do with this show not being good enough.
You don't want to agree with me all day.
No, I get bored.
Right. It's very boring.
It's very boring being right all the time.
Yes.
And being friends with somebody who's right all the time.
Oh, it's too much being right.
Blobber in the chat said that Brandon is the one with the lunch meat shirt. He was supposed to hand it off, but he kept it.
What?
The one Brandon with the lunch meat shirt?
We only have one lunch meat shirt?
There's only been one ever in the history of...
Does he mean the ass hat?
There's the one and only one.
I thought Nico had the ass hat. Does he not have
it? I don't know. And that was a cool thing. Like, hey, let's send this around. And then it got lost at some point along the chain because it relied on someone on the show to track it, and that's never going to happen.
It showed up at the San Diego NHC. I know that. A year and a half ago?
Really?
Yeah, it was around.
Huh.
I don't remember who had it.
Was it the original one, or was it like a knockoff, like a Chinese knockoff?
Oh, I thought it was the original. I don't know.
I got ass hat real cheap right here.
Yeah. How many you want?
Yeah. And say Gucci on if you want. It's fine.
G-U-C-H-I.
K. Anyway. Well, good. I'm glad you had fun in Nashville. Did you go to the Country Western Hall of Fame? Why Nashville?
I did go to the Hall of Fame.
You did?
Yeah, you know what? Everyone asked me that. I went with two girlfriends, and we wanted to go.
It's the only thing anybody knows about Nashville, except now cowboy boots.
That's true. Lots of cowboy boots in Yazoo.
And Yazoo.
Girls in short dress.
Bachelorette parties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go for the bachelorette parties.
Stay for the beer.
Like stay for the boots.
Trouble Rock and Monkey Head Nights. Like.
You know what I liked most about Nashville? Yeah. Is that because it's so humid there, it is socially acceptable to be dripping sweat and no one says anything. No one cares about like being wet in the face.
Miami's cool.
Phenomenal.
Yeah, I just want to go where I can sweat.
I just want to go where it's socially acceptable.
I'm going to rewrite the Cheers song to like the to that, but talking about sweat. You know, I felt the same way about being in Florida when I went to Disney World last year. Because it was so hot, and you kind of look around, and everyone has that V-shaped wetness pattern on their
shiny.
Front and back. Yeah, everyone's shiny, and I'm like, you know, I feel like a weird, sweaty family. It's very strange, but, like, nobody's looking at you like, fuck, that dude's sweaty.
I know,
but like, you walk down the street here, and you see, a super sweaty person, like, their hair sticking to their forehead. You might need to call an ambulance. Because they're going to keel over and die. That's very out of the norm.
I have a sweater, so I felt right at home.
You were wearing a sweater?
Yeah, they say how women don't sweat, they glow.
You are a sweater, right.
I sweat.
Yeah?
Legit sweat.
You're like neon.
What?
You're day glow. Are you talking about how sweaty you are?
The kid tried.
He's got He's got the better drugs.
The kid tried.
What are you doing over there?
Shoulder pads.
I don't sweat, actually.
I don't sweat dude.
I really don't.
Like
even
I
when I work out, my face will get tight, but it doesn't sweat.
That doesn't sound healthy.
It's probably not. I'm probably dying.
I'm pretty sure that's not right.
I don't like poor sweat either. Like, I'll get, like, sticky sweat and be like, oh, yeah, this is gross. And then that's it, though.
Is this just me? Maybe. Do I have a condition I'm not
I'd much rather live in Antarctica so that way nobody sweat ever.
Well, you have to shield yourself from the sun.
Don't you have to do that anywhere where there's daylight?
Not most people would.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, no, but I have to everywhere, so why
does
that
matter? He's not pasty. He's alabaster.
Whoa. She almost dumped a beer on your balls, dude.
You almost pulled a Bevo and spilled my beer all over me.
That happened one time. I was really happy to see you.
Once was too many, dude.
Speaking of beer and beardy, did you see the guy at GABF? Did you see pictures of that guy who had his beard, like, product up? Spell beer?
No.
In like 6-inch letters.
No.
I did not see that.
Really?
I'm going to look that up.
Please do, because not that I don't believe you.
No, I believe it.
But
big letters.
Yeah. What is with that? I mean, look, I guess if you got the beard, you might as well do something with it.
Well, if you have a big beard, you might as well try to attract more attention to yourself.
Right.
Warren's like something topical.
The last thing Warren wants is to get more attention from having just facial hair.
Right. Yeah.
But you still but you like it and you want to keep it, but it's just like
I like my beard, not the attention.
Yeah. Right.
Yes. Yeah, so I don't want to sculpt it into shapes.
hey, you're not looking at me enough.
Right, exactly.
Let me get this.
Hey, why don't you come cross the street and yell at me some more?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was only halfway paying attention because I was typing, but are we talking about the guy at GABF had his beard flat ironed into the word beard?
Apparently, yeah.
It was the most ridiculous thing I've ever seen. And I was like, how much time did that take? And
at the end of the day, I feel like with like that crowd, I feel like it would just sag and start spelling like boor or something. Like it would just start falling apart.
It was just a weepy beard.
Poor. Yeah.
The R might have been having a little trouble, but the E's and the B, oh man.
They were straight up.
That was a mega hold hairspray. It was good.
Yeah, I don't understand how they do that. It just seems like it'd be a mess.
No, I think
like the E, they make a strand on one side and then the other. So it's not like you don't have to have all that length.
Well, right, but I mean, how do you get your beard back to normal after having all that wax or whatever's in there?
Cut it off.
Yeah, I guess it's a one-time use.
Palmolive or Dawn or something to cut the grease.
It's hairspray, bro.
It can't be all hairspray to do sculpting like that.
You spray it, and then you flat iron it. You make it really hot, and then you like mold it into where you want it, and then it will dry and solidify that way.
No, really? I don't think for like sculpting words into your hair.
Let's talk about people who have hair and who don't, who know about this topic.
Wow. First of all.
Winning.
Oh. But your hair still moves. I feel
like.
I don't
use hairspray. But if I did, I could make it stiff to
get out
look.
Of town.
It could happen.
Get out
Prove
of here.
It.
Did you find it tasty?
Spell beer with your hair.
Did you find it?
I'm looking.
Okay.
Ain't nobody got time for that?
I got social media.
Are we fact-checking? This is the debate. We're fact-checking this
in real
time.
Well, so here's the thing.
I got the queen of social media here. I don't know why she can't.
Yeah, I just want to see a picture of the
dude.
You're
not friends with the guy?
But
I saw the...
Someone.
Ted,
someone. I don't know.
The Rare Barrel had a picture. They were posing with him. A bunch of people were posing.
Wow. I feel like you can make a lot of money being a four-letter word billboard. You know, like dogs, and then you're at like a Humane Society event.
I see a fellow with a hop beard.
It's the shape of a hop?
It's the shape of a hop.
Gosh, oh my God, what is happening?
All I did was Google beard GABF.
And you got a pretty close
I got
hit,
a pseudo.
Man.
It's pseudo, right?
Right. All right. Well, God bless this kid, whoever he is.
You're getting a lot of pictures.
See, I'm trying.
Yeah, you're doing good.
Damn it.
I'm surprised that hadn't shown up.
Yeah, you'd think it'd be like all over the place. Whatever. All right, let's do some feedback.
All right.
I still don't have the theme music, but whatever.
The
Who
Janet
cares?
Jackson song feedback?
Oh, yeah.
What?
Didn't Doc send it to you?
It's a real song.
Doc said he was going to... First, hold that thought. Doc said he was going to do it, but he couldn't get his email to work.
His AOL wouldn't let him send a file that large.
Right.
My gosh, why does he still have AOL?
I don't know. It's been hacked like 3 times.
Like it's
he's like, whatever.
I'm always like, Doc, what's your email? DrScott@AOL.com.
But it's like one T. It's not even two T's.
I don't know what it is, but I'm just
Two T's was taken.
You need to stop.
Yeah, there was someone with two T's. So every once in a while, he gets some weird fucking email about, hey, great party last night. I don't know. Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. This email is from Rob. He says, good noon, BN. Too soon. I won the BN Army More Beer giveaway a couple of months ago. Living in Belgium, a $100 gift certificate would have only covered the shipping cost to Belgium. Luckily, I planned a vacation to the U.S. and was able to get some More Beer homebrew goodies delivered to the hotel. So thank you very much and keep up the great shows. Greetings from the amazing Wooden Robot Brewery in Charlotte, North Carolina. North Carolina. Well, that's cool. That's a good way to, I don't want to say work the system, but good for you, dude. I like that. You don't give it away. Because we've had a couple international folks win that before, the $100 gift certificate. So if you're if you donate to the BN Army, which I always forget to mention on the show, you're entered in the monthly drawing for that, too. So, donate. Become a recurring donor. But we've had a couple of European listeners win, and they go like, "Why? Well, it's too much. I can't use it."
Because of the shipping and all.
Because of the shipping and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, and the taxes and whatever. But this guy's like, well, fuck, I'll just go to the U.S.
Makes sense.
He moved to the U.S.
Yeah, so
I might as well move.
It's worth it to me. Super worth it.
Speaking of recurring donors, I had a brewer come up to me I was in Denver, and said as soon as they start having some black ink, they're going to be sign up as big donors.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Be sure to give them my email, please.
I told them, like, great, let us know you did, and we'll certainly, make a big deal out of it, because it is a big deal.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. I wish we had 100 of them.
Yeah, right, Kim? What did you just? I feel like you sent me something.
I wouldn't do that. No.
Whatever. You didn't send me anything.
I just said I didn't.
Now his feelings are hurt that you didn't send him anything.
Right. Well,
why don't you want to send him?
Would you like me to send you a little something? Something.
Yeah. Yes.
Right now.
Yes. Well, you did like the.
What is your channel?
You did like the finger pistol.
Yes,
and
I did.
You clicked at me, and I feel like that you don't do that.
Tell me where, JP.
I don't know.
Where do you want it?
To my AOL address, please.
ASL.
Yeah, please do. Okay, this one is from. Pete. Actually, it's from Sweet Seattle Pete.
Oh, that Pete.
Right. Not just normal Pete, but Creepy Pete. This is Creepy Pete.
Sweet Seattle.
He says, hey, nerds. First of all, you guys fucking rock. I just found out about you guys 6 months ago, and I've been working my way through the archives. 8 hours a day, 5 days a week at work. Ugh.
And that's a normal work week.
That's a lot of us, though.
And for some reason, I'm not sick of you yet. We should all get married, he says. Except me, of course.
I don't know how things work in Washington.
I don't know either, but that's a lot of fucking. Like, I can't. I barely binged Luke Cage on Netflix for over 2 days or 3 days. There's no way that I could listen to the same thing for 5 days, 8 hours each day. I couldn't do it.
Well, it's better than work, maybe.
Well, that's true. There's no maybe about that, Warren. That's definitely true. In fact, let's just listen to an old show now instead of doing this show.
That sounds so great.
You know. Think about that.
Yeah. Anyone would do.
I think it'll be
last
amazing.
Week.
Yeah. He says, but I'm right at the third anniversary party Brewcast episode at Downtown Joe's with Colin. Wasn't that our fourth anniversary? Wasn't third at the Bistro?
No, that was the second.
That was the second. Oh, fuck.
Yeah.
All right. I can't love you guys enough, he says. I have yet to listen live, but from a brief glance at the forum, I've gathered that Doc is no longer with the show. Doc hasn't been with the show for like 9 years.
Yeah.
He's been here.
Is a loose term.
He's been here. He's catching up on his sleep here, so that's good. He's an older guy. He says, bummer, I'm still freaking out. Anyway, I'm not going to lick your assholes anymore. That's too bad. I actually have a legit brewing question. And I showered today, too. That sucks. Huh. I'm a new 5-gallon all-grain brewer, and my cooler mash tun has a false bottom that holds about a gallon of water below the screen level. Pay attention, Tasty. I feel like I won't know the answer to this. I've been adding an extra gallon, more than I calculate that I need, of strike water to my mash tun so that I don't have any dry grain at the top of my vessel. And then I've been sparging with one less gallon to compensate for that. Is this extra gallon making my mash too thin, or is there a better way to go about this?
Well,
I feel like, how do I know?
First of all, what's the problem with dry grain?
Why do
you have to end your mash with water on top of the grain bed? What's wrong with it goes dry? It's the last time through. I could see you wouldn't want it to go dry in the middle of your sparge, but at the end of the sparge... Who cares?
Well, no, you add it at the beginning, so that way your grain isn't sitting dry the beginning of your mash.
Oh, the beginning? No, I thought it was the way he was sparging.
He's asking if underletting is necessary.
Oh,
which
that's not what I got out of. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's what I thought.
I thought it was he's not adding enough water to compensate for how much grain he's using, so he'll have grain at the top of his mash bed that isn't even getting wet during his mash. But maybe you guys are each taking something different away from that. I don't know.
No, well,
honestly, I have no idea.
Okay.
Let me read it again. His cooler mash has a false bottom that holds about a gallon of water below the screen level. He's been adding an extra gallon of strike water so that I don't have dry grain to the top of my vessel, and then sparging with one less gallon to compensate.
Because he's sparging with one less gallon because he's adding one originally. So that way he doesn't end with another gallon of wort when he's done running off.
Okay, so here's the line that clears it up. Is this extra gallon making my mash too thin? So if you had...
He's full. His grain's all wet at the beginning.
Yes, right.
Okay. And because he thinks he may have put too much water in, compensating for... Not clear, sure what right now.
I don't know either.
Well,
because he made a really thin mash.
Yeah.
For no reason other than.
Well, he's asking if he did, and I don't know.
Is he doing no sparge?
No, he sparges.
What he's saying is if he's shooting for 1.5 quarts a pound, he's got 10 pounds of grain, he's putting in 15 quarts.
if one gallon of that goes below the screen, he would have most likely a little bit of grain that would be above the liquid surface level. I mean, that's why he's underletting.
I mean, you should compensate.
Technically, that's making a little bit thinner mash because there's 15 quarts plus the 1 gallon underneath the screen. So he's wondering if that's throwing off his liquor to grist ratio and making an actual difference in the efficiency of his mash and all that stuff, which the answer is not really.
Right.
If that's what he's asking.
Okay. I mean, I've always been taught to measure from the false bottom up. So, like, all that dead space is just, you don't count that in.
Well, no, but you're supposed to fill that with water.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And so that's what he's like, is that messing with his mash liquor to grist ratio?
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think it would. Because it's not in contact with the grains, right? So it's not, it's like effectively not really there.
Well, but that liquid is getting enzymes and starches and everything mixed in. So it is coming into play.
Okay.
But that's just something, that's just a variable that's different between brew system to brew system. And you have to compensate when you move a recipe to a different brewery. And so since it's the same for him every time, unless he's having issues, it's just something that he has to do every time, the same.
Okay, sure. Kim, does that sound right?
Yeah.
All right, sounds good. He says, also, fun fact, I hooked up with a chick a couple of weeks ago from Concord. Is that a fun fact? And apparently she was fucking someone who worked at the Hop Grenade for a while. Bonus. Yours truly, sweet Seattle Pete.
So now he's an Eskimo brother.
Do we know anybody whose girlfriend went to Seattle recently?
Oh, yeah.
Can we break some news to somebody right now?
Apparently Bev knows somebody.
I do.
Oh. Uh-oh. Apparently we should. Let's just move on.
Yeah.
With that. Although, I really. Who was it? Well, tell me.
We won't tell anybody.
Okay. This is to the Brewing Network team. I just wanted to express my sincerest gratitude for your live coverage of the 2016 GABF. This year, I was fortunate enough to enter the Pro-Am category, but having a seven-month-old at the house, whose name is Porter, I didn't have the financial means to make the pilgrimage from Texas to Beer Mecca. I was ecstatic to see that the Brewing Network was going to live stream the award ceremony and immediately glued myself to the computer screen, eagerly awaiting the Pro-Am results. It's gotta hurt. To like remove yourself from the screen. Like,
yeah, you might regret that now.
You are done.
Yeah.
It's hard to type with a corner of my nose. Thanks to luck, fate, judges that didn't know any better, I took first place with my rye pale ale. Wow, look at you.
Whoa,
all right.
Nice.
Entered on the Brewing Network. Oh, no, that doesn't happen. Being able to see the results live was incredibly awarding. You said that, as opposed to hearing about the medal via text and living vicariously through my friends at the festival. I just wanted to say thanks for helping me feel like I was really at the fest and helping me experience a once-in-a-lifetime achievement. Cheers, y'all, Cliff. Well, good job, Cliff.
Nice.
Congratulations, my friend. I'm sure you earned it. My Pro-Am beer didn't win a couple years ago, but that's fine. Tasty, do you do Pro-Am beers? Why don't you do Pro-Am beers?
Because I don't do amateur anymore.
Oh shit!
He's no amateur.
Burn.
I feel like that called
answer.
For two snaps
that's
and a
short,
fucking twist.
That's the short answer. I stopped entering competitions.
Okay.
No, I may come out of retirement. I'm gonna help the.
Is the homebrewing world ready for this? Fucking bomb!
It's gonna be a mild statement. I'm gonna try to help our local homebrew club, Doe's. If I can win a couple medals in the first round, that'd be great.
What? So you're jumping ship? You're jumping the Brewing Network ship?
Well, was he ever
he
on
never
that?
I never
entered,
network.
No, I never entered another Brewing Network. Only entered.
But I thought the first round medals didn't count.
Not anymore.
No, but if you get into the second round, they don't.
Oh,
you're
I see
very,
what you're saying.
Exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got a chance to win a medal.
Okay,
round.
I'm sorry. I just thought you were like, I'll just try to win some first round medals.
No, I'm a realist. I've done a lot of competitions, so I know I'll need to enter some local, regional competitions.
Yeah.
To get my game going here. So
right.
Once I do that, then. I'll be doing a collab with Rare Barrel.
Oh.
Okay.
I'm just kidding.
I was like...
Because I don't do rare, sweet, sour beers. And can you imagine, take me another year or two to get a sour beer.
Right. Well, I sort of did one for my wedding beer, but it was like a dry hop thing.
If I did a Goza in place, Do they care what you've done, Pro-Am?
Yeah.
Do they care what category you placed in? Is that to be in that category?
Uh-uh. Yeah, it has to be in the category.
In
yeah.
that category?
Yeah.
Really?
It's judged against the style descriptor.
Yeah.
I'm just talking about if you win an amateur medal in, say, pale ale, mm-hmm. can I go and enter in sour beer?
No.
Can't.
No, it has to be the same beer.
Same style.
Fuck. Yeah, I think so. Yes,
it's the homebrewer's
recipe.
Yes. Yeah. Because it's the homebrewer's recipe.
Right.
Yeah. Brewed on a commercial
system. Right. And it's that specific
that's
one,
where you
too.
That's where it doesn't change.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I might do some regionals.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be fun.
Yeah. So I get asked all the time, you want to do a pro-am? In fact, that's what they wanted to do at Central Coast Brewing when I did the session IPA with him. And they wanted to enter under that. I go, no, I can't. They said, fine, we'll just enter it as whenever I work their beers. So it's one of the five beers they entered in GABF.
Oh, yeah?
They won two medals.
Nice.
And we really thought ours had a good chance. The beer's really good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. It was poured on the floor of the JBF, too.
Just right on the floor? I feel like it's a slipping hazard.
No, stop it.
No. It was that good.
Everybody stood in line and just dumped it right on the floor in protest.
Yeah. That's the first time I ever had that happen. I've done a lot of collabs. It's the first time I've ever had one. Because usually they're one-offs, right?
Sure, yeah.
One-offs never going to make it to the JBF to be poured.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is a beer they're going to keep for a while.
Awesome.
Yeah.
What's it called?
Facilitator.
Hmm. Yeah. Wasn't that at the hop? Was that here?
Oh, yeah, we had a Sixtel here when it came out the first batch.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, I remember seeing
I've rolled in with a growler here, or two here and there, too.
I've never been here when you've done that, so that's weird.
It's pretty rare.
Yeah. It's like the Ray Barrel. Hmm. Okay, I'll tell you what. I think we should probably take a break. Don't get me wrong. We're still going to talk about the GABF because there's a lot of like BN family that won some stuff, and I want to talk to Sully as well because he made some big moves at the GABF, and then we're going to chat a little bit about judging at the GABF and kind of how that goes because it's very different from homebrew judging, and I feel like maybe not everybody knows that. So we're going to take a break. We're going to come back. We're going to chat with Jesse and Philip from Almanac Brewing Company. We're going to talk about beers. We're going to drink some beers and, you know, like that. It's the session. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters. On the Brewing Network.
The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
Do you like beer? They make beer.
Watch out!
Do you like friends and fun? They make friends and fun.
Watch out!
Do you still like to have a good time? The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
The 21st Amendment in San Francisco, located at 563 2nd Street, two blocks from the building where baseball is seen and played. Try their beers in the pub or try them in the can, featuring
Monk's Blood.
Made with real monk.
Watch out!
So why not have the best time of your life? Go to the 21A and Sean O'Sullivan will personally greet you with a can of
Monk's Blood. The 21st Amendment.
Watch out!
This advertisement is not in any way affiliated nor associated with the 21st Amendment Bar and Pub, nor its subsidiaries or affiliates. This telecast is not copywritten by the 21st Amendment for the private use of the Brewing Network. Any use of this telecast without Jamil Zainashev's consent is prohibited. Suck it, JP.
The Vault, created by White Labs. The Vault is a collection of new, creative, and unique yeast strains from around the world. These strains have never been available to homebrewers. Most have not even been available to professionals. You have the power to release the yeast. Through The Vault, White Labs is giving you the power to decide which strains are put into production and giving you the opportunity to brew with these strains. Visit whitelabs.com/thevault and pre-order the yeast strain of your choice and encourage your friends to do the same. Once 250 pre-orders have been achieved, White Labs will put that strain into production. The strain will be mailed directly to your doorstep, ready to make the beer you've always wanted to brew. This program was created with the homebrewer in mind. White Labs is relying on you to help release these strains, which may blaze the way for future new and unique beers. Help release the yeast. Visit whitelabs.com/thevault.
Brewing great beer is a process of continuous learning, and the best books on every aspect of brewing can be found at Brewers Publications, with more than 50 awesome titles like Modern Homebrew Recipes by Gordon Strong, Designing Great Beers, The Ultimate Guide to Brewing Classic Beer Styles by Ray Daniels, American Sour Beers, Innovative Techniques for Mixed Fermentations by Michael Tonsmeyer, For the Love of Hops, The Practical Guide to Aroma, Bitterness, and the Culture of Hops by Stan Hieronymus, and Radical Brewing, Recipes, Tales, and World-Altering Meditations in a Glass by Randy Mosher, plus many, many more. These are the books and the authors with the knowledge to push your brewing farther than you thought possible. And you'll find them all at fine homebrew and book retailers everywhere. And visit the website at brewerspublications.com. Brewers Publications, all the best on beer and brewing.
Since the first time the Brewing Network microphones turned on, More Beer was behind it. More Beer sponsors the programming on the BN because, like you, they love brewing. And like the Brewing Network, they love sharing their knowledge. MoreBeer.com isn't just a website to place your next equipment or ingredient order. MoreBeer.com also gives you access to free beer information that will make you a better brewer. Go to MoreBeer.com and click into the Learning Center. You'll find podcasts, technical facts, video tutorials, and more, including access to The Buzz, More Beer's social network of more than 5,000 members. And some of them might even be crazier about beer than you are. Get over to MoreBeer.com today and take advantage of The Buzz, the forum, the Learning Center, and make sure you're signed up to receive the newest More Beer catalog. More Beer, bringing you absolutely everything for beer making.
Marin Brewing Company in Northern California has been making award-winning beers for more than 25 freaking years. Today, I want to tell you about their new 12-ounce cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale. The good stuff. Mount Tam is bright gold, 5.5% ABV to keep you feeling good, and has been winning awards since 1989. If you're visiting the Bay Area, get your butt out to Marin Brewing Company. They pour tasty beers and serve great food every day until midnight. Come in for a tour, stay for the food, and pick up a six-pack of cans of Mount Tam Pale Ale to enjoy at home, camping, biking, or whatever the hell you do. Owner Brendan Moylan has this to say about Marin Brewing beers.
It's freaking awesome.
Marin Brewing has won more than 100 gold medals in international competitions. Check out marinbrewing.com for all their award-winning beers, food, and merch. Marin Brewing Company in Larkspur, California. Award-winning taste, refreshing finish. It's freaking awesome.
Brewcasters are back.
888-401-BEER.
Whatever.
Everyone, thanks for hanging out, sticking with us. We got the boys from Almanac here in the studio. But before we get to that, I want to tell you guys about, we have a cool new, so from time to time, we do what's called an iBuy on the Brewing Network store. And so we have a cool shirt for you this time. It's called the California Flag Tee. Let me see. Where did I have all those notes for it? There it is right here. It is being released, I think, today. It's a pre-order only. That's how it works. So you go on the site, and you pre-order the shirt, and then they get printed up after the pre-order ends and then shipped to you, and everything's great. So you go to codisibuy.com/thebrewingnetwork. There's three different styles. Each one has multiple color options, all that kind of stuff. And it's like the, you know, the California state flag, but with a hop grenade on it, all stylized and everything like that. So you can get them in colored shirts, or the three-quarter sleeve, like baseball tees, and, of course, the tank top.
Of course.
Of course. You got to have the tank top versions, right?
Right. That's actually all I wear now.
Just tank tops?
Yep. All day, every day.
I can't tell if you're wearing one now because you're wearing a white shirt, and I don't know if it's just your pale shoulders.
Exactly. Yeah.
Or not.
It's, well, my skin is so blinding
right,
that I just look white.
Right.
All of it. So And usually people put graphics in, like, the chest area, so my beard covers what you would actually be able to see.
Yeah, you know, and I feel like we should have T-shirts for brewers, especially that are follically gifted, mm-hmm. as yourself, where it just has the logo, like, lower.
Yes. And I think it'd be nice to even put something underneath where the beard goes that mm-hmm. would say, grow beard here. So mm-hmm. then for the people that, if they are so inclined to buy one, people understand why the logo is at someone's belly button.
That's true.
Because you could have a beard, then it doesn't matter.
You can cover it up.
Yeah, exactly.
You do whatever you want.
No other words there anyway.
Smart. So, smart, right. Warren.
That way it's a broader audience for those people that wish they had beards.
Yeah. I feel it's a much more narrow audience.
Oh.
But you're doing great.
Thank you. It's my $1 million idea.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anyway, check it out. CODIS, I buy. It's just the letter I, right? .com/TheBrewingNetwork. And get in on some of that pre-order stuff, man. Okay, so we have Jesse and Philip. Philip or Phil?
Phil's great, yeah.
Phil, okay. You got to get on that mic, though, Phil. There you go. From Almanac, how you guys doing?
Good, how you doing?
Perfect. Why can't I hear? There we go. Now, try that again.
I'm doing good.
There
oh, better.
We go.
I can hear myself.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Doing great.
When everything's working, it's working well, man. So you guys are did you guys both start Almanac? Are you both owners, or what do you each do?
No, I started Almanac with my business partner Damian Fagan. He's the CEO and head designer.
Okay,
and the two of us started together. And Phil is our barrel manager and brewer.
Oh, nice. Yeah, you guys do a lot of barrel stuff, right? A lot of big barrel program going on. Was that kind of your first passion, I guess, is just working with wood, working with barrels? That was kind of just the direction you've always wanted to go?
Yeah, our first beer that we ever released was a barrel-aged blackberry beer, actually. And so right from the top, we started with barrels.
I feel like you're swinging for the fences already, man, right from the gate.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. We definitely, like, I think we did, like, 300 cases of it, and we were really unsure of how long it would take us to sell it all.
300. Like, okay, yeah, for a new brochure, yeah. I could imagine some apprehension there. How long did it take?
Like 2 weeks.
Oh, geez.
Something like that.
Wow.
And then we had no beer to sell after that. Like, we brewed that beer.
Yeah.
But there was, like, no plan B for where we were going to make the next batch, actually, after that.
Really?
Yeah. And so we did the first batch, we brewed at Drake's in San Leandro.
Okay.
And then they got very popular and were making great beer.
Yeah.
And so we had to relocate down to San Jose. And so I think our next beer only came out, like, a few months later.
Mm-hmm.
And at this time, it was, like, just me and Damian. We were selling beer out of the trunk of our car.
Oh, geez. You're like a mixtape.
Oh, yeah. No,
like a mixtape out of the trunk of your car.
Oh, yeah. We had we still had our, like, our 9-to-5 jobs, and we're just selling beer on nights and weekends.
That's there's something cool about that. There's something like I don't know.
It's cool when you think about where they are right now.
Well, yeah, I'm sure at the time it sucked, but
it feels more romantic now that I don't have to do that.
Right.
Well, just you were a home brewer and a foodie, right?
Yeah, and me and Damian actually. So me and Damian were in a homebrew club called the BABC, the Barry Brew Crew. So it's a homebrew club that no longer exists.
Okay.
So Damian and I met in that homebrew club, and then Tim Clifford from Sante Adarius was a member.
Yeah.
And then Mike Mraz from Razbrewing was a member.
Jesus.
As well.
So that club basically just got a whole bunch of sour wild beer brewers out.
Yeah.
Of
in retrospect, we had really high standards for our homebrew.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like everyone was making some good stuff, man.
Pretty good. The club's not around anymore. I guess we all left and started breweries. So.
Yeah. Right.
Couldn't find a better thing to do.
It's an occupational hazard.
That's right. Once you're hooked, you're hooked.
Yeah, well, I could see that.
I got the feeling you guys were making good progress with your sour beers while in the club. I mean, that seems like a good set of people.
Oh, the wife is happy that all the homebrew club has been excavated from the small San Francisco apartment. Because it was like a sea of 5-gallon fooders, and she's like, how many of these do you need? And I'm like, well, this one's only a year old. It's just getting to the good part now. And so it was...
These other 10 are young. What are you talking about?
Yeah. But yeah, we started as homebrewers. I was I identify as a recovering beer blogger. So I wrote a San Francisco beer and food blog and tracked homebrew and all sorts of cooking and stuff like that. And then I actually started I did the first beer dinner that I sold tickets to was the first San Francisco Beer Week.
Oh, wow.
And when I actually was able to sell out that dinner, I was like, holy crap. people will pay money for this. I could actually like make a career in beer, which seemed like so far away at the time.
Yeah, for sure. Especially something that's your passion or your hobby.
Yeah, absolutely. So for us, like that culinary point of view has always been like really core for Almanac in terms of our beers being really designed to go with food. Mm-hmm. And from like the very beginning, you know, when we started, which now, I mean, we started Almanac over six years ago, Dean and I met, which just feels like ancient brewing history at this point. Mm-hmm. We were really inspired by the San Francisco food scene, the farm-to-table movement, and we felt like you'd see these amazing meals that were so carefully put together, and they really sourced the ingredients from all these different farms, and then they have this very carefully curated wine list, and then some beer. And the beer really felt like it wasn't a focus. It was sort of a side thing. It wasn't tied into what the rest of the food was doing. And so we really conceived of Almanac from the very beginning as being like, you know, we farm to barrel was our motto from the very beginning.
Okay,
and
yeah.
The whole idea was let's make beer that ties in a sense of terroir, which is a dirty wine word for like a sense of place, mm-hmm. back mm-hmm. into beer. Because like, as you guys know, like, you know, malt is homogenized, hops are homogenized, they're blended together so that when you brew a beer with like the same ingredient, it should be the same every time, like consistency, you know.
Right,
you
yeah. guys
know, I don't have to tell you about that.
I preach that all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so for us, you know, tying in with these local farms and tying into the seasons, and that's where the name Almanac came from. So a farmer's almanac is a record of the season. So what we want to do is make beers that by working with these local farms, you know, last year when we were in the height of the drought, that's going to affect the flavor of the raspberries and the strawberries and all of the different fruits.
Really?
Beers.
Like to the point where it would come through in the beer?
Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
What does it do?
Well, it just depends on the fruit. So the sugar level will be different, you know, for example, in the fruit. And this is, you know, true with grapes too.
Yeah.
So that the, you know, the weather and the struggle is actually what creates character mm-hmm. in a lot of these fruits. And so we, you know, go to the farmers markets and talk to farmers about buying very, very large amounts of their fruit, and they're like, you want to do what with it? And and then the idea there is all these beers with these local fruits, they're all vintage, like a wine would be. So last year's blueberry is going to be different than this year's blueberry, not just because we're getting better at making beer all the time, mm-hmm. But also because we want that fruit to reflect that individual character and that sense of place.
Sure. Okay. I like that. And it definitely fits in with the modern day food culture.
You know,
a lot of people looking for high quality foods, different foods that don't need to taste the same all the time.
Exactly.
There can be that swing.
Well, the idea is that provides like a deeper connection. And mm-hmm. then, when we started selling the beer, we went after San Francisco restaurants. That was actually like really where we went to.
Okay.
And that we thought they just gave us great placements. And we'd go in and we'd tell them about, you know, this citrus infused sour is made with citrus from Hamada Farm. And they go, oh, well, we work with Hamada Farm. We use their citrus in this dishes.
Okay.
And that gave a natural in for a way to pair those things together because it's got that what grows together goes together kind of mentality to it.
All right. And people seem to be embracing that.
Yeah, we like it. Yeah. It's kept us in business. So far,
so good.
Do you think it's that kind of community mindset that people are drawn to as much as the beer?
Yeah, and I think, you know, when there's like a, it's interesting, a lot of restaurants, you know, the beer buying would oftentimes fall on the chef, you know, if the somm wasn't
really
necessarily, very, very common. Yeah, the chef, you know, because the chef would be more interested in beer than the somm would be in these places.
Right.
And so it provides that, you know, sense of place. And the idea of coming in and speaking that same language, that the beers are built with like a culinary vocabulary, you know, not just a brewing vocabulary mm-hmm. as well. And so trying to, you know, blend these things together.
Okay, so sometimes you're just talking to the chef, so you guys can have kind of a common verbiage.
Exactly.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, and that's what made doing a lot of beer dinners really fun is, you know, oftentimes I look for chefs that don't necessarily know anything about beer. I'm interested in their outsider perspective. Mm-hmm. And so we'll put one of our beers in front of them and just be like, what do you taste? What do you think would go with this? And not worry about any sort of traditional pairing rules or things like that, where it's very organically built on top of the flavors and their palates and their perspectives.
Hmm. That's very cool. How long were you homebrewing before you started having dreams of selling beer out of your car?
Well, I mean, the dream started early, I think. But I was probably a homebrewer for about 5 years or so, and that continued for a few years into Almanac, too. So of Almanac's or first beers were all developed as homebrew.
Okay. Are you still doing any homebrewing? I mean, tinkering?
Sadly, no.
Really?
No, not so much these days.
Do you miss it?
Yes and no. It's I miss the – it's fun. It's a really great activity. It does seem like a very inefficient way to make
5 gallons of beer these days.
So. Yeah. That's true. At the end of the day, you have 5 gallons of beer, but you've lost like 8 hours of your day.
Right. Although what's funny is when you're a home brewer, I feel like you always think, well, if I had a commercial brewery, my beer would be so much better because I could do this and I could do this and I could do this. And then when you get to be a commercial brewer, you go, oh, I miss being a home brewer where you could just do whatever you wanted and there were no rules and there was no label approval. You know,
there is a trade-off.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. Now your wife complains about there being too much room in your house.
Well, I mean, that really hasn't come up, believe it or not.
Oh,
but,
weird.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, because we've talked on the show a lot about home brewing and talking to people and trying to bring commercial brewing techniques into home brewing. And sometimes you just can't do that without different equipment. And so I think maybe that kind of feeds some of that home brewer lamenting over not having a, I don't know, a centrifuge. It's the first thing I can think of, but
sure.
I know it's very impractical. So, you know, it's just an example, but that's interesting that on the flip side, you're kind of wishing you didn't have as much equipment, right? Because then you could do almost more with it. There's not a lot of oversight. There's not a lot of cleaning and all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, there was a lot of cleaning, but when they're you know, when you're a home brewer, like tinctures for any kind of spice addition, mm-hmm. you know, whereas you just can't be introducing hard alcohol into your beer if you're a commercial brewer.
Oh, okay.
That's frowned upon.
Okay. Just a bit. So how do you
rarely disclosed, by the way.
Right. No one does it ever.
Right. So how do you do that then? How do you transition that? Like, how do you bring these little techniques as a home brewer over to the commercial side?
Well, I do think you can oftentimes tell when breweries came from like a homebrew perspective because you see those sort of little homebrewy techniques, in play for a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think, you know, it just opens up different opportunities, but it provides a different perspective where I think for homebrew, it was always, when I was a homebrewer, it was much more like brew beer you can't make anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, make new weird, you know, beer with citrus in it. Who would ever want such a thing?
Right.
You know, whereas, you know, when you're a home brewer, you know, and you can just make the beer for you, you mm-hmm. know, whereas I think when you're a commercial brewer, you know, you got to make beer for everyone, not just yourself.
Yeah, and that's definitely, we've definitely talked a lot about that too, Tasty, about especially underneath the IPA umbrella. I maybe more complained about it than anybody else about you have to brew IPAs.
Well, that's,
because and you may not like it.
That leads me to a topic that we need to discuss here tonight.
Uh-oh.
It's the beer called Never Say Never. What's the basis of that name, Jess?
Well, that was going to be we've got some beers we were pulling out right now. Do you want to drink? Just jump into that one right now, or
yeah. I mean, should we go down the order?
Frankly,
you tell me.
I frankly prefer hoppy before sour.
I don't mind playing palate whack-a-mole at all.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's start with a double IPA.
I feel like if there's any Cicerones listening, they're like plugging their ears and going la 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 la.
Is that Yana Viva? Which one is
the middle one?
Never say never. And then.
Awesome.
Raspberry. Some kind of berry.
It's purple.
Beverly berry.
Raspberry.
So it's the middle one.
Yeah, the Never Say
Okay, so this is Never Say Never. What's up with this beer?
Well, why don't I turn it over to Phil, and I'll let Phil talk about how we made it a little bit.
Phil, how did we make this beer?
So this is a really fun thing for us to work on is these hoppy beers. You know, everyone knows Almanac for sour beer predominantly.
Mm-hmm.
So we started working on some fresh IPA, and then which is SFIPA, which kind of Never Say Never is the big brother and a sister to a beer we made for Beer Week called Don't Call It Frisco. So the idea just being a beer that's you know, really hoppy but not bitter in the trend that's going on. It's the beer that we want to drink, really. It's we're a big fan of this very soft bitterness, nice aromatics, delicate water profile, high protein. So that's this beer is all those things.
So cloudy is what you're not saying it.
Well, we don't.
You're avoiding.
We do use centrifuge. So I mean, I think there's a difference between cloudy and chicken soup yeast.
I call this beer clear.
Yes. Okay.
Which personally,
well, yeah, looking at it, it's not cloudy.
There's
but
no yeast in this beer.
It sounds like you were describing to be a cloudy beer.
It's like a New England IPA.
Well, you can get the effect of cloudy, by the way, that I think describing how he makes the beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is what we've talked about forever.
You can get the flavor.
You don't have to have it be a yeast slurry appearance or even have that flavor, which they typically do. And you can have a high protein beer that still you can see through to the other side of the glass.
I mean, everything's upside down now that we're complaining about how gorgeously crystal clear this beer came out with, like, no, it just accidentally landed exactly where it was should have been 5 years ago.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Now we want to, you know, we want to look like a milkshake.
I'm happy with this level of haze, definitely.
I think it's totally fine. It's totally appropriate. Like, I would not be questioning this, this thing at all. But, it is very luscious, very delicate. What am I trying to say? It's not like super bitter, like I would imagine a double IPA would be. And is that because of like kind of that more round malt profile?
You know, I think a lot of it is that we retain a lot of our bitterness from Whirlpool, which is tending to lead more just towards hop resinous flavor, but not necessarily like isomerized bitterness.
Yeah, totally.
We also play with the water profile in a way that we're kind of favoring chloride. So. You know, I learned to brew by home brewing as well. I went to school for brewing at Davis and worked at other breweries. But at a heart, I'm still a home brewer. And I look at this like, what do I like about West Coast IPAs? They're bone dry. They're dextrose driven, very low mash.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about East Coast IPAs is that very kind of whirlpool, you know, it's almost like you're eating a hop sometimes. It's
yeah.
Like a full flavor. And I think a lot of that comes from the protein malt, comes from... those very late additions for hops. And so that's what we're going with here. It's kind of our first attempt at a hybrid between the two. What do we like about West Coast? What do we like about East Coast?
Sure. Go ahead, sorry.
Just a beer that's easy to drink and sort of hides its ABV well.
Yeah, it is very much, I think, more hop flavor than I recall. I mean, I don't drink a lot of these kind of beers, but it is like you get the roundness of a hop. It's like when you have a really good cider, and it's like you're eating an apple, where you get some of the flavor from the skin, and you get some of the meat flavor, and you get some of the juice, and you blend it all together, and it's just like you're tasting an apple. I think it's like what you were saying. It's like eating a hop. It's you get some of the earthy, you get a lot of the different scale of what these hops are actually doing.
What hops are you using for bitterness?
So this beer is it's predominantly Mosaic. It's about 80% Mosaic. And then Motueka and Equinox kind of make up the difference there. So the Motueka is our first hop addition, and then we're kind of whirlpooling out with Mosaic and Equinox, and then dry hopping with all of those. But again, about a ratio of 80 and 10 for the dry hop. And just looking to kind of, you know, emphasize the parts about Mosaic that we like, which is that really big tropical and that sort of almost like an armpit, you know, kind of a good
tropical armpit. It's like a nice sweaty,
it's sweaty melons. Armpit. Yeah, it's a good stank. Yeah. It's a good stank.
I call it earthy kind of character.
Huh. Well, when we were developing this, this is exactly like how we'd describe it. Is I'd be like, I'd call this 40% dirty hippie smell and 60% mango. And Phil would be like, yeah. And I'd be like, I'd really like 15% dirty hippie. I
think that's so you still like a little dirty hippie.
Just
in your
a little,
beer.
Well, you know.
Just a little bit.
You gotta, I think that adds, you know, I think when it's straight mango, mm-hmm. you know, when it's just straight juice, you need a little of that sort of supporting flavor. You know, it's just like you need a little bit of the bitterness. You need a little bit of that malt profile poking through that the water profile. I think all those things support it and make for a more complex, enjoyable beer. Because mm-hmm. if it's just, I mean, pure mango is great sort of for that one GABF sip.
Right.
But when you want more than just that, when you want to drink a whole pint and hopefully go back for another, you know, I think the beer has to offer more than that.
Yeah, for sure. Especially, I think, with today's beer drinker. You know, we want more. We want a little more roundness. We want something a little more, I don't know, approachable, but also, you know, complex in a way. I think you need that.
So, Phil, you mentioned calcium chloride. What sort of, you know, ratio did you come up with for this beer?
It's almost 2-1 on this guy, chloride to sulfate. It's 1.6, I believe, 2-1. It's something we've been playing around with a little bit, and we're really liking the results that kind of getting our calcium levels at a nice level, and then just making that chloride really just slightly above the sulfates. We're working with Hetch Hetchy water for these brews, and it's just, you know, the cleanest water that exists, almost. You know, it's almost like Bohemian Czech water, you know, Prague water, just very, very clean, soft. So it's great to build on, and, you know, the way that we brew, it's great to make these very small tweaks and be able to taste them and see, you know, do we like it with a little bit more of this salt? Which way direction? You know, we do calculations to determine the, you know, the average PPMs, but at the end of the day, it's really just, you know, does it taste better?
Yeah. And I've told homebrewers often that one thing they should consider doing is actually adding more calcium chloride to their finished beer as a on the tasting tape, part of the sensor, and see if it would make the beer better.
You can definitely add salts post-fermentation to get a good idea about mouthfeel changes. Yeah. There's definitely, you know, there's some malt differences depending on where you add the salts, but it's a great technique.
It doesn't, it still carries through. There's nothing in, like, the brewing process that makes it taste different than adding it post.
Yeah, the brewing process reduces it, and a lot of it ends up in the grain and in the tube and all that, but what comes through is the same stuff that you add later.
If it affects your pH, obviously there's like mash differences and things like that, but it's definitely like a mouthfeel thing. It's a fullness versus a sort of a dryness.
Okay. I mean, is it like an exact thing? Like, I know how much I added to my glass post, so now I can scale that up pre?
So I got to be honest that in my wisdom of 3.5 years of professionally brewing, I can't answer that question, to be honest. All I can say is anecdotally, these are my results, and I'm really happy with changing water profiles for specific purposes.
Okay.
And then homebrewers should take, their takeaway would be...
That's good enough.
If you can, you add some, and your beer tastes better, then you might consider
then
changing
figure it out, right.
Your water profile at the beginning incrementally. Don't like...
That's a path you should go down.
Go from like 1 to 2 to 1.
That's a hard correction to make on the next recipe. If you had 3 grams of chalk to a finished beer, it doesn't equate to, I'll just add 3 grams in the mash the next beer.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a lot more going on than that.
Will craft beer bars offer like little tableside pinch bowls of
they
salt?
They fucking should. I'll tell you
a restaurant does.
Right. Yeah. I'm waiting for the bar to like have the little hop oils and just sell nothing but like American light lagers.
Oh, yeah.
And go, how hoppy do you want your PBR, dude? Mm-hmm. And I think people would totally be down for that.
Can it come out of like a mustard or ketchup squirter?
I think it should, as a matter of fact.
Just actually do it how IPA started, in that everyone brews triple IPAs and the bar just dilutes it to either a double, single, pale ale, or session IPA.
I don't know, because there's no interaction. I don't know.
The beer I drank when I came in was our blend of SF IPA and Never Say Never.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Just mix the two together.
Just because
Jamil, a heretic, does that. He'll take like the robust porter and like water it down.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And it'll make it mild, and it tastes good.
Yeah. Watery grave.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah.
Little blendy poo.
Well, he doesn't blend
poo. Hey, that Shallow Grave won an award, you know.
It did.
It's silver.
Yeah. Oh, we'll talk about it. Oh, we're gonna applaud him.
Not right now.
But later.
Yes.
I like this beer. I mean, for a double IPA, it's not bad, man.
I'm a big fan myself.
Yeah. We were going to call it Not Bad, but Never Say Never passed the test at the end.
So Never Say Never is in the context of, you guys said you never make an IPA.
Well, right. So that's when I was, you know, a young, inexperienced brewer 3 years ago.
And you were going to be a true farm-to-table guy.
I get the idea. Prone to shooting my mouth off and having no idea what I was talking about.
You're so humble.
You'll fit right in on the show.
That hasn't changed much.
We made a business of it.
I think our stance was, you know, at the time as a young brewery, we didn't want to brew beer where everyone else was brewing.
Sure.
You know, we wanted to go to, like, a different space.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're like barrel, you know, fruit beer, you know, no one's doing that. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we did that. And I think what we underestimated was, one, I think our own internal love of IPAs and our desire to make them so we could drink them ourselves.
Sure. Okay.
And two, that we found that there really was a market for it, that people liked our point of view and people liked, you know, what our brewery was doing. And we found people being like that. The fact that we didn't brew an IPA seemed to be like way more work than brewing an IPA.
How so? Like in just explaining your stance on life?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. As opposed to being like, here's some IPA you can buy.
Right.
That's way easier.
Right. It's almost you're turning people away at some point, because there are people who only drink IPAs, or that's all they are interested in, which is fine.
Sure.
That's what they want to do.
And I think also, you know, the other thing that really happened is the IPA category has just exploded so much and diversified so much. And what we found was, you know, in this sort of halfway in between East Coast and West Coast IPA was the space we were really interested in playing in, and that we want those flavors that I love pairing IPAs with food as well. They're so food friendly and you can do all sorts of cool stuff with them, especially when you're talking about, you know, these juicy hop forward IPAs with low bitterness. And so we wanted to drink them and we wanted to sell them. And so this beer was sort of we called it Never Say Never. So it was a little coy acknowledgement of
how you were wrong.
Of completely wrong. Oh, totally. Right. Completely wrong. But I'd rather be wrong and change my mind and now be right, you know, as opposed to sort of sticking our heels in and being like, no, we're not going to do that.
Even Monkish changed their mind. I mean, they had a fucking sign that said no IPA ever.
Yeah. Well, it takes
and
a
now,
minute.
Now it's not there.
It takes a minute to sell an IPA, or you can have a 5-minute conversation about why you don't have an IPA to sell.
Right.
And so after a year of doing that, it's like, well, I enjoy having more time to myself, so I'll just make an IPA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have to talk to fewer people.
Yeah. That's a bonus. It is interesting what you said, though. There's a lot of people who say the same thing. Well, we didn't want to build an IPA, but blah, blah, blah. And really, we just enjoy drinking the things. And I think that kind of comes back to the core of being a brewer in the first place, is you're brewing stuff you want to drink. So why wouldn't you?
I mean, what's the point of owning a brewery if you're not brewing
the beer? You can't get super drunk, right?
You know, like, if you can't indulge your every desire for every beer to make.
So. Right, right. Speaking of that, let's jump backwards in time before we had the double IPA and try the white label, I believe it was.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me about this beer a little bit.
So this is a beer called White Label.
Which is this one. Yeah, okay.
We picked up a silver at GABF for this on Saturday.
Nice.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not worthy. Congrats. Nice. Yeah. Good.
Are we clapping for the label?
Well, now you're excited.
No, we'll clap right now. It's fine. Yes. That's amazing.
Thank you. We're incredibly excited. This is actually the first GABF medal Almanac has ever received.
Oh, wow.
Nice. So this Congrats. Was... we lost our GABF medal virginity.
Nice.
We're very happy about that. It made the Saturday session way more fun. Wearing. I don't know how long it's socially acceptable to wear the medal around. Like a week or 2 weeks.
The ribbon holds up in the shower. So,
right, you know. Right.
I'm actually shocked you don't have it on right now.
Yeah. Well, it was either the brewer shirt or just the medal.
Just
you know?
The medal would fit right in, man. Yeah. Are you going to get it tattooed? Like the thing tattooed on you? And that's all your medals right there. That's really cool, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, we're incredibly excited. We got it in the mixed fermentation category as well. And so that's a new category, a Brett focus category.
Okay. Is that mixed Brett?
Yeah. Brett with lacto.
Okay.
Or Brett with acid.
I think that's the category that Flattail won in. They won the bronze for their damn wild.
Right. The pink peppercorn.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's really great.
So your beer's better than his.
No. Well, officially.
Yeah. Officially better than Dave's.
I kind of want to call Dave up and hey, Dave, so we have the people who beat you in the category right now. Do you want to ask him any questions, any tips?
Yeah, right. Do better next year?
I just want to add that I like Flattail a lot. I genuinely do. I love Flattail.
We love the guy. He's like the bean doormat sometimes. I don't know why.
I texted him and I asked him how he did, and he told me, and I was like, oh. But why didn't you get gold?
You sound like my mother. That's like right on. You couldn't not gold, huh? Right. One.
Well, I guess silver's not bronze.
Well, yeah. There's always room for improvement, I guess.
Well, these categories have like 80, 90, 200 beers. So time to get down to first, second, third. I mean, they're basically equivalent, I think.
I mean, we're...
Oh,
we're,
yeah, for yeah. sure. I agree. That's a good... That's a very positive statement, Stacey. Are you okay? Are you doing good?
Just because you're not fourth.
I'm sure all the gold medalists would agree with you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, they don't talk to us. I mean, right. We're just silver medal people.
Yeah, no, they get whisked away in a private car, and you're, like, taking the bus.
Yeah.
Holding
well, you know,
on the thing.
I see a lot of judges at GABF, and I go, oh, what'd you judge? Oh, I would judge this and that. I go, how'd that go? Well, this one beer, the first place beer... was like automatic. It was the best one, no doubt about it. And we struggled between the second and third, which one would be the best. So that makes, you know, that's interesting information for that category.
You know, too, if I you know, just want to kind of add in onto this, you know, this is our first medal. We really looked at the notes from last year and just really looked at the judges' comments and, you know, took that as good feedback. It's really positive feedback. As a homebrewer, you get those, if you enter, you know, competitions, you get this great feedback. You know, I think when you're making beer and you're giving it to your friends, you give it, you know, everyone just tells us the best beer ever.
It's free.
Yeah, it's free, right? but no, it's great. These, the feedback from the judges is it's really valuable. You know, there's some contradictions sometimes, but it really kind of helps you figure out where that beer fits, which category. Because I think a lot of times winning a category is really about making the beer fit in that category best.
Yeah.
Even if you have to make it worse. So really, say it's more, it's less tart than you'd like it.
Sure.
But that seems to be what they're looking for.
Yeah.
So did you have some strategy behind not going into just like American sour beer and going into this new category?
We abandoned the American sour beer category this year.
Why is that?
It
says no Brett character, and we do 100% primary Bretts for most of our beers. So it's sort of like, well, it's probably going to taste like Brett eventually. At 100% Brett fermentation.
Well, there's like a sort of a
Brett in there.
It's like a Kremlinology reading, you know, the different categories. Yeah. So, you know, we also went back and looked at who won in previous categories as well. I think is a really good indication of like what the judges are looking for.
Taste the beer.
The beers.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, everything we submit, you know, for what it's worth, everything we submit off of is we pull cases from inventory. We don't do any special blends. We are submitting the actual beer that we are selling in the market. And so for, you know, we don't put together, you know, we don't change the beer for the competition. We look at, you know, we're going to release, you know, like 27, 28 sour beers this year. So we have a lot to pick from in terms of it. So we go through and we do like a tasting panel. We taste it. We see what we really like, what we think responds well. And then I put together my list of what I want to enter. And Phil puts together his list of what he wants to enter.
And what categories.
And then we see if there's any overlap at all. And then sort of pick and choose from there. But yeah, we're very, very happy to have gotten some recognition this year.
Yeah. That's congratulations
great.
Again.
The beer tastes amazing.
Well, thank you.
It's really good.
Second best, you know.
Second best in the nation.
It tastes
man.
Like it.
Yeah. I would have said gold, but I mean,
you would have been wrong.
I would have been wrong.
That's why they don't let you judge.
Well, that's true. That's true. Plus, I couldn't make the flight. I would have been on Bev's flight, and I heard her flight was terrible. So, coming over the Rockies, man. I don't want to do that.
So this beer, the sort of concept from it came from, there's a lot of new, really cool German aroma hops these days that we love. We're brewing with them. They're in our IPAs. We're using them in the sour program, too. So this beer was actually designed to highlight Hauertauer Blanc.
Nice.
Okay, I haven't played with that one yet.
That's a nice one.
You're talking about, like, we've talked a lot about the Mandarin...
Mandarina.
Thank you.
So we highlight that. We make a beer called Mandarina, and we highlight that hop there.
But this is the Hauertauer Blanc.
Yeah, the Hauertauer Blanc. Right. So it's sort of like the idea, you know, it's like a poor, you know, we jokingly call it poor man's Nelson, except for that it's more expensive than Nelson. and it's sort of German by way of Auckland. You know, it's kind of got a little of that German noble hop flavor, and it's got a little bit of that funky New Zealand, you know, Riesling grape kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
And then we used, I'm a sucker for a high concept beer. So we had these Muscat, we used Muscat Blanc grape juice in another beer we make called our Grand Cru, which is like a wine beer hybrid. But we pulled some of that off into this project. So it's sort of combining a sour blonde blended with this Muscat Blanc. And then we are really, really interested in dry hopping sours these days. We're doing that in a lot of beers, not just we do in our Hoppy Sour series, which is really focused on highlighting the hop.
Yeah.
But we're doing in a lot of other stuff now, too, because we think it's a really great way to introduce additional layers of flavor and complexity to that sour beer. And also that brightness and freshness that you get from that complements it. So that was kind of the marching orders I gave Phil. And then I'll let him sort of talk about how he put the beer together.
Yeah, please do.
Yeah, so the idea being that, you know, to emphasize those Blanc hops, which are that kind of, sort of poor man's Nelson, but unique in their own. A lot of apricot, kind of diesel-y, really floral. And that sort of describes Muscat, I think, is kind of apricot, diesel-y, and sort of floral. So we put the two together, and we're aging it really well, and we're liking it, and we're getting some kind of cool citrus notes. And I've been playing around with Brett and trying to work on some bio transformations with Brett, which is kind of fun. And I think coriander is one of those ones that if aged with Brett presence, you get some really cool flavors, and it goes to more of a citrus flavor. There's no citrus in this beer at all, but I think that citrus note is all the coriander aged with Brett.
Huh. Okay.
What does biotransformation mean?
So there's some aromatic compounds.
You didn't know either, Jesse?
We'll keep it simple. I don't
Phil's,
know.
Phil's
I don't really know it either.
Than
yeah.
I am.
It's just the glasses, honestly.
Trust me, it's not.
But there's a little bit of activity that Brett can do on some molecules. Some of them are aromatic, but they're sort of bound to a sugar molecule. Some of them are generated by secondary metabolism pathways. So coriander is really high in geraniol, which is present in a lot of hops, big flavor contributor.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm going to butcher the name. I'm sure everybody at Oregon State is laughing at me right now about this. But citranol, I think, is the word. But it's really big in citra hops.
Okay.
And so geraniol becomes the word that I can't pronounce. And Brett, that's my theory. I've read some papers on it, and anecdotally it works. It's something we've been playing around with at coriander and Brett fermentations. So particularly active Brett fermentations under coriander kind of produce more citrus flavor
okay.
than not. That coriander kind of goes away. It's not the spice anymore.
Right.
It's still kind of
right.
here, but there's a lot of citrus.
Yeah, a little bit. But yes, it's definitely much more citrus heavy than coriander, but there is that kind of... I don't know, what do you call it, flowery, perfumey, maybe, kind of thing coriander, but...
And that kind of plays
not,
off the hop, too. It's, very geraniol, butchering the word again, heavy.
Oh, yeah, like for geranium, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
See, now I'm with you. My brain is slow.
Phil, would that be Brett strain dependent, or...
So I'm going to, again, I don't actually know.
Good question.
Yeah, I honestly don't know. But we have a pitch that it's about 18 strains of Brett that we've collected that we've grown up separately.
All in there. Okay.
And we really like them. So the way we manage our pitches for sour beer is we kind of just grow things, and if we like it, we add it to our main pitch.
Okay.
And, we're on Gen 46 right now of one pitch that we're just super happy with, and we've added to it, and we've corrected it by IBU additions and things like that, and
all right.
eliminated.
So you notice changes, but you're rolling with those changes.
Absolutely, but it's a lot like a sourdough. Some breads aren't as good as the others, but the average is just improving with time. It's becoming more and more complex, and we're really happy with that pitch.
So did you ever pull any aside and set it like as a in the library as a reserve, just so you can always go back to
the pitches?
To a gin, yeah.
So we don't have that ability. We have a couple of tanks, and we have a couple of kegs that we use for yeast, so we're pretty limited. But what we always do is we always set aside barrels from each new pitch, and I try to hold on to them as long as possible.
So if you want to go back.
So if it's something special, I have something to go back to.
Excellent. So you're using hop bitterness to kind of regulate the amount of bacteria that's in your culture that you're repitching?
Yeah, exactly. We will use this culture for beers that will include lacto in and for beers that don't have lacto. And our lacto is getting pretty hop tolerant at these stages. So we're brewing almost what tastes like a pale ale that ages out to more of a saison over time. It works really well for this pitch.
So are you able, now you're saying it's getting more hop tolerant, but initially are you able, if you just do like a higher IBU batch, that the subsequent batches have a lot less, a noticeable amount of less acidity contributed as quickly or even long term?
We don't have any lacto in the primary, I believe.
So our primary is just Brett. But what we find is that because we use the same equipment for everything, we do pick up lacto from here to there. So as we see like a sort of shift in our pitch, that this beer just tastes slightly more lactic or more sour than previous. Or we're measuring total acidity and we're measuring pH. We will brew we're calling it. Our normal Brett beer is called Brett Base C because we did A B and then C we like the best. so then we make a beer that's called Brett Base Dank, which is the bitter version of that. And we use it recently as a fun way to introduce Whirlpool hops into Brett fermentations. So our Hoppy Sours coming out next year will be including a lot of Whirlpool hops into some of the Brett fermentations in a fun way.
Wow.
But it works really well to keep down the lacto. I got that tip from Jeffers.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool, man.
Nice.
Yeah, I like the beer. I'm digging on it. I think it's pretty good, man. Let's talk about this blueberry. The Farmer's Reserve Blueberry.
So this is our Farmer's Reserve Blueberry. So this is Farmer's Reserve series is one of the ones we've been doing the longest. It's really just trying to put the fruit right at sort of the heart of the beer. So we love blueberries. They're extremely challenging to brew with. I think you have to be really careful with balancing Brett flavor. You know, a lot like strawberries, that if you get a lot of Brett with those phenols from the fruit, you can actually create a lot of Band-Aid kind of character.
Oh, really?
And so okay. We try and stay away from that. I think it's you gotta balance it really, really carefully, where it's sort of like blueberry pie, blueberry pie, blueberry pie, and then it goes Band-Aid, and trying to hit that balance. Obviously, we've got like a really deep red color.
Yeah.
It's great radio, I guess, describing the color. But this is obviously more of a lacto forward than Brett forward. And just trying to highlight the fruit and create that, like we said, that sense of place. So the blueberries in this came from two different farms this year because we're buying so many blueberries that it's difficult for some of these small farms to. How many blueberry pounds of blueberries do we take in this year, Phil?
12,000 pounds.
12,000
wow.
pounds.
Whoa. Yeah. So, we took in about 25,000 pounds of fruit total last year. Jeez. And where are we? Where are we this year?
We're just about 75,000 pounds of fruit.
75,000 pounds of fruit. So,
really any much more beer, just more fruit.
How do you get all that through really? That little hole in
some
the barrel?
More beers.
That,
yeah. Some new beers.
Fruit comes in. All the fruit comes in direct from local farms. We don't really know how else you would buy it.
Safeway, dude.
Yeah,
it's right there.
Yeah. So we open up all those little containers. So the fruit comes in. We drop it into like 5 gallon buckets, and you know those little immersions blenders used for making like soup at home and stuff like
that.
Yeah,
like the little handheld.
Buzzer kind of things.
Yeah.
So those come in jackhammer size.
Oh, jeez.
RoboCoop. Yeah. So we'll about 50 pounds at a time in like a 5 gallon bucket, which is really fun for like 20 minutes, and then your hands go numb.
Of the vibrating.
And then it sort of becomes like a game of trying to Tom Sawyer other people in the brewery into helping out. He's like, that looks like fun. And you're like, it is fun. Would you like to do this for 3 hours? Yes, you do.
Whitewash my fans.
Yeah.
That's why you time it to get tours.
Yeah.
You just get tours running through there.
So you masticate the food.
Yeah. So
macerate?
I mean, yeah.
Macerate.
Yeah.
No, they do both.
Whatever you do. Whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We puree, and for
now
us.
Now it'll fit in through that hole.
Exactly.
Yeah, masticate.
And so it's masticated and then macerated. So,
but not on the same day. We're making chicha.
Yeah. So we blend it and then it goes into the barrel. So we tend to.
So how many pounds per barrel go in?
In the barrel, each barrel will be about a third, somewhere between a third and a half fruit, and that's in the barrel.
Whoa.
And then we actually top that off with already aged beer. So we select. We want the fruit forward base beer that's going to really support those flavors. So that gets topped off and allowed to ferment.
How messy is that?
It's a lot less messy than it used to be, actually.
There is a permanent stain on the ceiling.
Which is where it should be.
So.
Yeah. You sound like a home brewer.
Yeah.
That's never going to come out.
And so so that goes in the barrel. So that's in the barrel. So we sort of create those as fruit blending barrels. And then we go through, as the beer ages, when we, constantly tasting it, and once we feel like it's getting ready, we go through and do that. And then we start blending that together. And then Phil and I will usually argue about exactly where that final blend is going to land, where he wants to make less beer and I want to make more beer. we sort of try and hit that compromise that, because we really pride ourselves on we want to make our beers available to people.
Yeah.
You don't have to come to San Francisco to find our beer. We want our beer to be available on the shelf to, so you can get it.
Yeah.
And so we try and really always hit that balance that hits that, we want to be really fruit forward. We want to be bright. We want to be food friendly. And we want to have that, like we said, that sense of place where this really captures what this summer was like, in a glass.
Okay. The moment in time.
Exactly.
Kind of a thing. So you talk a lot about, working with food. So what would you pair with a beer like this? More blueberries?
Yeah.
Cobbler.
I would do something like this. Blueberries, and some of these, especially like blueberries, to me that goes to like game meat,
Okay.
So like blueberry and venison is always like really, really great together. I love blueberry and duck. Anything like that has some of that sort of funk. You can even do like a lamb dish with this would be really good.
Now you're talking. Now you're talking my language.
This would be great with French toast, I think, too.
A little gamey French toast.
Yeah, exactly.
Pancakes. I think smoke and spice for me. Like a spicy basil or smoky kind of.
Yeah, it's great with ice cream.
So anything, pretty much.
Yeah, yeah.
Food.
Right. That's my pairing is food.
Food.
I like to food pair with food. I think it's a great beer, man. So when you have, you said you about a third of the barrel is fruit. How much beer are you actually being able to put in there because of the displacement from the fruit?
So in the past, we didn't actually have fooders or totes either. So we would stuff a barrel as full as we could and then kind of blend it back. We still do that for some beers in a way. But now with the fooders, it's really kind of opening it up too that, you know, it's just a bigger barrel. So we're able to put a lot more fruit in there, put some nice old beer on top and let it ferment it out. Makes cleanup a lot easier for sure.
Okay.
So almost like a full volume fruiting.
Yeah, maybe like a 60-gallon barrel, maybe 45 gallons. The 40 gallons is actually beer.
Yeah.
Wow.
We're probably netting about 38.
Okay.
On average. But the fooder, you know, you net a lot better. It's a better, more surface area. Just kind of easier extraction.
You have any plans to try to streamline that to kind of hit Jesse's mark of making more beer?
We just brought in some wine totes. So if you go to a lot of sour breweries, you'll see these kind of wine totes sitting around that are square. And so we got a few that have manway doors. It's just making clean out just so much easier. You know, bunghole was an inch and seven, you know, three quarters or whatever. And, a manway door, you can park over, you know, the grain out bin and feed the cows some sour cherries.
Yeah. Is that what you do with all your sour?
Some of it can go that way, but for the most part,
yeah, we're actually focusing a lot right now on second extraction with a lot of our fruit, which we're finding really exciting. Where you can actually create, and this is something like Jester King's played around a lot with their beer Detrivore, which I really really like. But what we've discovered is we dropped another Brett beer, like a more hoppy Brett beer, on top of the spent blueberries, and the second generation is already the same color that the first generation was.
Oh, cool.
That a lot of that fruit, there's a lot more to give, and what we're actually finding is you're actually pulling out other really great flavors from that second use of that fruit as well.
Is it like there's just this saturation point where the first gen beer isn't going to do, it's just maybe going to go negative if it stays on the fruit too long because all the skin breakdown or whatever, or what's the thinking behind that?
I think that there's there's definitely there's some things left. You know, there's sugars left, there's fruit flavors left that we're not getting to. But I think because of the way we're doing it too, that we're doing primary fermentation on that leftover fruit, we're getting some other transformations as well. We're just getting new flavors out of it that were
bio transformations.
Possibly, I'm not.
Well, there would be a bio transformation.
I just pretend to be a scientist.
His glasses aren't that thick.
Yeah.
No, the fermentation itself is going to, you know, take in one flavor and put out another.
Definitely. So we're seeing some really cool results that way.
That's interesting. That's cool. I like it. I like the beer, man. It's great.
Thank you.
It's great. It's very very round flavor.
Yeah. And you mentioned you guys are measuring both pH and total acidity. How is that different?
Yeah, great question. So, you know, we got this idea as well from a presentation from Firestone Walker. Just great folks.
Dropping acid with Jeffers.
It's called Dropping Acid with Jeffers. So it's presentation on TA. But, you know, the idea being that pH measures, free hydronium ions in solution.
Yeah,
sure.
Totally.
Sure, right? But TA actually measures, like, the amount of acidity there. pH is kind of a reference against how much buffer there is, right? Like, you know, your blood's buffered, everything's buffered, right? There's things that just interact with those hydronium ions and change the pH.
Sure.
So
my internet's
to keep
buffered.
To keep it more like...
Sorry, I'm totally derailing you.
Related. the end result, the TLDR is, 3.7 pH beer can taste wildly acidically different to based on, you know, what's in the beer, what acids are present. So acetic is more of a harsh sour. Lactic is a softer sour than that. There's plenty of sours that are produced in fermentation, you know, that are desirable and not desirable. But TA, total acidity, just kind of tells you how much acid's there. So we use that as a reference point for blending. We're making a beer series called the Brettaville, which is focusing on fruit and hops and Brett and all the fun combinations those can make. But for the most part, you know, plus or minus a little bit there, because these are aged in barrels. We're hitting a really strong point of about 8.5 grams per liter of acid, and that's what we're using as a blending target for consistency. When we're trying to adjust the acidity and mouthfeel, is the same amount of acid. So that's the kind of idea there, is that pH can tell you something about it, but it doesn't tell you enough about it. Total acidity tells you really about the acid that's present.
Yeah, because there's more there's more than just that pH.
Right.
So it would indicate more how assertive the flavor would be of the acid?
So, I mean, you know, I don't know these numbers off the top of my head, but, you know, like Rodenbach or Dutchess is very high in total acidity, but there's some sweetness there that balances that out.
So the pH would be lower than...
So the pH might be the same as, you know, say, like a Sante Adarius beer or one of our beers, you know, somebody else's beer that's a sour beer. But I think drinking those, if the sweetness wasn't there, it would be massively, massively more perceptible sour. So TA just kind of lets you know how much acid's really there. pH is sort of like how much is buffered, you know, how much other stuff's in there.
Right.
It's not really relatable. It's good for enzymes and stuff, but TA just kind of lets you know exactly how much acid's there. And if you know how much sugar's left over, you know, like your final gravity, that's a really good balance that sugar versus acid lets you know a good mouth flavor.
Well, now, the home brewers can do pH easily. Can, how would they get TA? Is that possible on
so
a home brewing level?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So there's these, for wine home winemakers, they make home titratable acidity kits, and they're not terribly...
Titrates.
Okay.
Yeah, they're not terribly accurate, but they're really... it's like a pH strip color code.
Okay, sure.
Which would really give you a good idea, you know, are you at 8 grams per liter? Are you at 10 grams per liter? Are you at 12 grams per liter? And if you're making a similar style of beer, it gives you a good reference point of what the last beer was and what the next beer could be.
Right. Yeah, more
and
beer
8.5, you say?
That's what we're looking
that's
for.
That's your baseline, I'm sure. That you vary by...
It varies.
What fruits in the beer?
Some fruits, some hops, totally.
Does the TA relate to the residual alkalinity at all? Because, like, homebrewers use RA a lot when they're setting up their water to get what their pH is, and, you know, that tells you about the buffer in the solution.
That's Kyle, by the way. He's a homebrewer sitting in.
Hi, guys. Residual alkalinity would relate to the pH.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the TA is the TA.
Fucking get with it, Kyle.
Well,
Jesus Christ,
dude. All right, I'm sorry, man.
We've talked about this. We were talking about this just thing before the show.
What a homebrewer question.
You really are a fucking homebrewer, I tell you what.
Can't see, but I'm giving you much love.
All right, we're going to take a break real fast. But before I do, I want to tell you guys about Williams Brewing. They are your online resource for prompt delivery of quality home brewing supplies. Since 1979, Williams Brewing has offered the finest equipment and the freshest ingredients, backed by the best customer service in the business. You like to mash using efficient fly sparging, but would like an easy way to heat your Strike and sparge water? Enter the new Brewer's Edge Electric Mash Water Heater, a plug-in anywhere, precisely controlled heater for Strike and sparge water. Ditch the fumes and second burner and make mashing easy. Go to williamsbrewing.com today and browse their vast selection. That's williamsbrewing.com. Orders placed by 4 p.m. Pacific time weekdays ship the same day. Brewing is easy. Of course, you guys know this. The Williams way. All right, we're going to take a break real fast, and we're going to come back. We're going to drink more beer from the folks at Almanac. It's the session. Hang out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Brewcasters.
The Brewcasters on the Brewing Network.
Do you know the three most important rules in brewing? Sanitation, sanitation, and sanitation. And no one does it better than Five Star Chemicals. Five Star knows sanitation. You can only sanitize clean equipment. And Five Star knows how to clean, too. For craft brewers and home brewers, Five Star has what you need to keep your fermenters, serving tanks, kegs, and draft lines sparkling and free of any beer-spoiling bacteria. PBW, caustic, acid cleaners, Star Sand, SantaClean, lubricants and defoamers, pH stabilizers, and more. Five Star Chemicals has cleaning supplies, safety supplies, heat exchangers, pumps, hoses, and valves. And Five Star is proud to offer eco-friendly products that exceed customer expectations. If you have a cleaning problem, you need the Five Star solution. Visit FiveStarChemicals.com or call 800-782-7019. 800-782-7019 and get the Five Star treatment today.
If you haven't heard, there's a completely new brand of brewing equipment. Kettles, burners, and accessories. Trustworthy everyday gear that helps you forge and shape outstanding beer the way you want. It's called Anvil Brewing Equipment.
Hi, I'm John Palmer. You may remember me from such self-help books as How to Brew, Brewing Classic Styles, Water, and the Brew Strong Podcast. I am very pleased to announce the debut of Anvil Brewing Equipment from Blickman Engineering. I have been working closely with them these past few years to develop products that combine the best of materials, features, and price point. Each of these products has been developed, tested, and reviewed to meet these ideals and bears the Palmer Brewing Solutions stamp of approval on the packaging. Anvil Brewing Equipment, inspired by Palmer, built by Blickman, and made for you.
Check out anvilbrewing.com. Anvil. Durable. Reliable. Dependable.
That's it. I've had it. I am never putting hops in my beer again.
What? Why?
It's just too ridiculous. Insane prices, stupid contract, high shipping costs, crappy selection.
Dude, you need Nico Brew.
Nico Brew will rock your f***ing face right the f*** off your f***ing skull. $5 shipping to all 50 states, plus fantastic international rates get you low prices on Nico Brew's great selection of hops and more. Whether you're a home brewer, a pro brewer, or a homebrew shop owner, Nico Brew can get you the hops you need in increments big and small, single orders, spot buys, or full contracts. And there's only one place to join the uber special secret Elite Bare Bones Club, where you'll get the best deals anywhere.
Holy f***ing shit!
NicoBrew.com. NikoBrew. Nico Brew, your bare bones buddy in the brewing business.
If you work in retail sales, the restaurant industry, or are a new craft beer enthusiast, or you know someone who is, you have got to check out Beer 101. Beer 101 is an online course created for anyone wanting a quick introduction to the vast world of craft beer. Beer 101 covers the history of beer, brewing ingredients and processes, vital stats like ABV, SRM, IBU and gravity, styles, tasting, glassware, and pairing beer with food. The Beer 101 course is offered by the Brewers Association at craftbeer.com, also home to the truly awesome Beer Style Finder, a visual guide to every beer style. Quickly play with color, bitterness, and alcohol content to interactively explore the entire world of beer styles with a gorgeously designed interface to your favorite beverage. The new Beer 101 course and new Beer Style Finder are only available at craftbeer.com. Craftbeer.com, celebrating the best of American beer.
You're tuned into this session
because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking with us. Before we get back to the tasty beer, I want to let you guys know about Great Fermentation. Yeah, tasty in Paris. I want to tell you guys about Great Fermentations. They have the largest catalog of Blickman products on the web, and their staff is some of the best trained in the business at using Blickman products. They offer top-notch customer service and same-day shipping on many items. Check them out, greatfermentations.com. They're also on Facebook at GR8 Fermentation and on Instagram and Twitter as the very same, greatfermentations.com. Throw that away. So because I'm stupid, I'll just keep reading the same thing over and over again. Put it in the back and then shuffling it to the front, and then it's like, dude,
Great Fermentation.
What are you doing? Right, just so you guys know. Okay, so we have two bottles of the Almanac Grand Cru in front of us. One is the Imperial Sour Blonde Ale, and the other is Imperial Sour Red Ale.
They're gorgeous bottles.
They are gorgeous bottles. Look at that.
I wish I could.
Who does the artwork for those bottles?
So these are really cool. So this is actually the second year we've done it. I'll also mention you guys are the first people outside. These are the first two bottles to leave the brewery.
Fine.
We are not worthy.
This is a world premiere.
You know how long we've been doing this show and nobody gives us scoops on anything?
We're not going to find out tomorrow that you scooped us going on a podcast
this
yesterday.
This hasn't even been added to our website as of right now. Like, so this beer is conditioning right now. But I'm going to credit Phil. Phil really wanted to bring something special for you, assholes.
Thank you, Phil. Yeah, that's pretty good.
I've always liked Phil.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my favorite name.
Really, really getting over that bio transformation thing now.
Right.
So what do we have first, man? What do we drink first?
Oh, but I want to talk a little bit about the design. So this is, we sort of do it as our anniversary beer. Mm-hmm. And the idea behind the Grand Cru beers is they're beer-wine hybrids. And they're sort of designed from the top down to be nothing's held back. And specifically, so I was talking earlier about Damien, my co-founder in the brewery. Mm-hmm. Damien was a designer by trade before we started Almanac together. And so he oversees all creative design for everything that we do, all the bottles. And for these, we now have collaborated. Last year, we collaborated with a local artist named Derek Manovich. And this year, we worked with a new artist named Chad Michaels, who obviously does like a lot of just incredibly ornate sort of whiskey bottle driven design.
Nice.
And so they're full bottle screen wraps, but it was entirely, totally done by hand, really, really talented. And the real idea is to create something as beautiful on the outside as is on the inside.
I've never seen brown look so good.
Yeah. So there's two of them in the series, the Grand Cru Red and the Grand Cru White, and it's basically a red a red wine beer hybrid and a white wine beer hybrid.
Okay,
they're both
right.
Imperial sours. We partner with a local winemaker, a guy named Paul Einbaum in San Francisco. So he's a sommelier and a winemaker. He did the wine program at Francis and Octavia Restaurant. He's opening a new place called The Morris in San Francisco, which I'm super, super excited about.
Okay.
And we work with him, and he sources wine grapes from wineries, and we bring in the juice and then combine that with a special imperial versions of our base sours. We source the specialist barrels that we can find for each one. And this year, we really wanted to stretch them a little bit more as well. So the white, it is, I think it's 10.2% alcohol.
10.6?
10.6, yeah. The white is 10.6. It also has apricots that are from Central Valley.
10.5.
Oh, liars.
Incorrect. Jesse, you have the board.
And then we, that's brewed with apricots and Muscat Blanc grapes. And we really try and put as much grapes in there as we're allowed to by law.
So no, sorry. 10.6. I was picking up the wrong bottle. Phil, you have control of the board.
And then the red is brewed with a blend of grapes, Zinfandel, Petit Sirah, a few others. Those all are grown in the El Dorado Hills area in the foothills of the Sierra Nevada Mountains outside Sacramento.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
And then this has raspberries and vanilla beans.
Yeah.
And those vanilla beans, I think, are really, really shining on the nose, too.
All right, so what do we drink first? That's really all I want to do.
I guess we should start... Well, I think since we started with a double IPA as our first beer...
Now it doesn't matter?
I feel like we should start with the red. Let's just jump right into the
All right.
Beer.
Look at this.
You don't have a triple IPA we can try first?
We'll never brew a triple IPA.
Of course you will.
Here's some Everclear. I find it tastes better if you chase it. So this is the red ale with red wine grapes, raspberries, and vanilla beans. What are you guys getting in the nose here?
This is actually the first time I've had this out of the bottle too, since the blending.
How long ago was that? What's your time frame between the blend and the bottle?
How long has this been in the bottle now?
I'm going on about 3 weeks.
3 weeks, and this will come out in like it should be on shelves in around a month from now, give or take.
Are you bottle conditioning or is this packaged fully carbonated?
Little sort of in between. It is carbonated when it goes in the bottle, but we leave a little head space for that to come up. And especially with something really, really high alcohol like this, we actually get like wine bottle shock kind of characteristics come out a little bit.
Okay.
And so especially with such a big one, we just, you know, last year we really found that the longer it sat, the better it was. And so we built in just some additional conditioning time this year as well.
Okay. So this won't be released for a while then?
Be out in about a month or so.
Okay.
Awesome. Awesome. Wow. It's
I'm going to run around and tell people I had it. And then,
yeah. Is it on social media yet? Because I feel like
I don't think it's not. It's definitely not on Untappd.
No, I mean on Tasty's. On Tasty's social media. Because I feel like you're missing an opportunity here, man.
I'm just saying.
Shit. Be the first.
Right.
Oh, my God. Well, that red wine character really comes through, man. And is it boosted by the raspberries? I mean, is that why you guys added the raspberries in there to just kind of emphasize these more red wine? Probably sounds stupid.
No,
like
totally.
Red wine characteristics, but not red wine.
That's
because
exactly what we did.
Sometimes if you have like, you know, beer in red wine barrels and there's enough wine in there, you can kind of get that oxidized 2-day old bottle of wine taste in there. This doesn't have that.
You know, really what we did is we tasted it about 6 months in and looked at, like, what was the highlights of the, you know, the flavors. And I brought those to Jesse and kind of like, hey, I'm tasting this, I'm tasting that. He came down and tasted the barrels with us. I'm tasting this, I'm tasting that.
Yeah.
And we just kind of picked the things we wanted to emphasize. So in each beer, you know, the Muscat had this sort of apricot-y nose like Muscat does. We threw apricots in along with it.
Okay.
And this one, we were just getting kind of like a very woody sort of berry flavor, like almost blackberry, very red, raspberry. And
okay,
we
I
decided
see what
on raspberry with that one. Sort of that like almost like the seeds of the berry.
Yeah, sometimes you'll get those like those fat raspberries that have a lot of the, I don't know, what the core inside, right, or whatever, that all the berries are on or whatever.
Yeah, there's a really cool word for that. But
I'm sure there is. It's not as cool as biotransformation, I'm sure. But sometimes you'll like chew on that and you're like, there's a lot of excess material that's not juice.
Yeah, tannin sort of flavor, right? Like, yeah. Like astringency that kind of comes together.
Yeah.
So we thought we'd be...
I get a cherry character out of it. Cherry. I think the vanilla sort of moves in that direction. And then the tannin, sort of like a seed, sort of, you know, character at the end, reminds me of like cherry pit sort of sensation, even though it probably doesn't have a real cherry pit flavor. It's just the tannin sort of like give me that character.
I agree 100%.
Yeah, and the base beer is like an Imperial Flanders Red kind of malt bill. Oh, so I think we're pulling out, it really highlights. So it's based on a version of our Dog Patch Sour, which is our sort of Flanders Red inspired sour. And so we do an Imperial version of it here, but we think those malt notes really support those flavors as well there.
I like it. I think it's really great. Good, man. That's really good.
Do you macerate the grapes too here, or do you...
They're already pressed juice.
Yeah, they come in as juice for us.
Okay.
So it's a lot easier, actually. That's way less labor intensive, so...
You get the juice right from the
Yeah,
vineyard?
They press it at the winery, and then truck down to us, and then we pump it into the stainless tank, into, you know, we basically brew a half batch of the base beer, and then we pump the grape juice on top of it. And this is, when I describe this with the winemaker that works with us, he just looks at me with, like, abject horror that we would,
right.
that we would treat wine in such a way. And I'm like, no, this is how we treat our adjunct ingredients. That's what we want to get it in there and get that fermenting, you know, and get it, you know, get it blended and make it a part of that beer.
So do you do the primary with just the malt-based sugars first? Is it reach terminal before adding... The wine?
Yeah, it's like a 13%, 12% Imperial Sour. And then we throw that juice in there, and then the yeast is very unhappy, so we discard that yeast. And then we start all over again for the next one.
Why just all that shock?
It's just very high ABV, so we don't harvest from that, but yeah.
Okay.
So how much of the alcohol content comes from just the malt sugars?
It's almost 50-50, which works out really well
for 51?
Exactly. That's malt. The legal answer is 51.
Fucking Phil, dude. Yeah. Jeez.
You're the big guy.
Who is this guy? 51%. It's a splendid beer, man. I don't necessarily... I wouldn't be able to tell that there's vanilla in here.
Really?
It's very subtle.
I mean, I'm getting tons of vanilla on the
really?
Nose.
Really?
Yeah, I think it smells like pie.
I get it on the taste too.
Yeah,
it smells like cherry pie to me.
But I don't put vanilla in my cherry pie. So I don't like. To me, those two things aren't.
You don't put vanilla in your cherry pie?
No,
no, no. Man. You don't typically. It's just that I think that ester brings it towards the cherry.
To me, it.
Bev,
makes
what
it,
your face is screwed up. Like you're holding back a fart. What
that's
do you?
How she looks.
What do you
that's,
want?
That's just how my face looks.
Okay. Well, you look like you want to say something.
Well, I just don't. I think you're wrong. I think. You do put vanilla in your cherry pie, and you just don't realize it.
I don't.
Vanilla extract.
No, Taryn puts.
Yeah, I don't put it in my cherry pie.
This isn't a cooking show.
Welcome to the Baking Network.
It can be whatever we want it to be.
Are we talking about cherry pie?
But I think you're wrong.
We can talk about SpaceX. So I don't give a shit. We'll do whatever we want.
But we like, you know, vanilla oftentimes has such an affinity with oak flavors. Mm-hmm. That oak, I mean, you know, actually like fake vanilla flavor tends to be made out of wood even. That's the affinity so strong.
Oh.
And so we actually really, you know, we always, for this beer, we always bring in, you know, special barrels. So red wine barrels that we just sourced, freshly dumped, younger as well, to try and pull out more oak flavor because, you know, it's something special.
Yeah.
And I think
the
oak really helps smooth over that alcohol. Because it's a very, very high alcohol sour beer. And then the other thing we've actually, you know, and we've been playing around with this in some of our other beers is acetic acid in, you know, in sours. And this is something that came out of Jeffers and his dropping acid in the TA stuff is that A small amount of acetic acid is oftentimes kind of the secret ingredient to a lot of sour beers. That if you put a lot of it, you've got a lot of that acetic production, it tastes like you're drinking vinegar. I don't like that at all.
Is that the nail polish remover character?
That's the...
No, that's something else.
That's the ester.
Yeah. No, this is acetic is like vinegar, like balsamic vinegar, like red wine vinegar.
Oh, okay, all right.
Like real vinegar.
Same chemical.
Okay.
Like I always think you get that tingling on like the back sides of your tongue and like your throat when you get it.
Uh-huh.
But what's amazing is that when you have a very, very small amount of it below perception threshold, it adds an incredible amount of complexity to the beer. And in fact, that is oftentimes, and this has actually come out of White Labs has done some research on this as well with and presented at CBC. And this is a big thrust with the Firestone education on TA, is that it's that complexity and the joining together of these acids in the beer that makes for that really complex profile. And so what we found is vanilla and the acetic acid character actually go together very, very nicely and sort of merge together. And I really like the balance on this, where we've got that in there, but it blends a little bit with that red wine tannic note too.
Yeah.
But the idea is it should not be salad dressing. It's got to be really, really tamped down.
Thank you for that, by the way. There's enough sour beer out on the market that tastes like that.
And so do you keep that acetic acid producing bacteria just in this beer, or is it in all of them?
You said acetate, or I think you said the nail
polish remover.
So acetate's the ester of acetic, and so acetic isn't just a acetobacter. Brett makes acetic, so we're really not looking for acetic acid in particular. We're looking for acetate. It's like a real thing we're looking for, and that comes from Brett. So acetate is more floral in small quantities. It's very fruity in small quantities. But yeah, definitely in large quantities, it's solventy.
Mm-hmm.
So that we found that the vanilla and that ester are kind of really cool. So it's we're definitely not using acetobacter barrels by any means. We're using barrels that Brett has got a little tiny bit of oxygen into it.
Yeah. Okay.
Very long-term aging. And there's a small amount of acetate, but that small amount goes a long way. That's coming from Brett, okay. Yeah. It's not...
There's a nice parallel over to like what we were talking about with brewing salts and calcium in the beer too, where it's that the building block lower level flavor that then promotes the things you're really looking for.
Precursors.
Yeah. Okay, got it. And this being a Flanders kind of base style, there's a lot of Flanders. Like the big one, the big culprit to me is the Duchess de Bourgeon, or however you pronounce it. That it just always tastes like nail polish remover to me.
Sure.
Just always.
Yeah.
And even Rodenbach. I can't drink Rodenbach. I think it's too sweet.
I mean,
too
both of those are pasteurized and back sweetened too.
Okay.
So.
Okay.
This beer is zero Play-Doh, so there's not really anywhere for... it's 0.3 Play-Doh. There's nowhere for vinegar to hide,
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And so every time I hear Flanders, I'm like, I don't want, because of that nail polish remover, but I think you guys are kind of going about it the right way. Which, in case you didn't know that.
Well, thank you.
I can tell you that.
I wouldn't call it a Flanders. I would call it sort of inspired
or Flanders
by.
Style. But, yeah, okay, right.
But I
get,
like, very sensitive to, kind of consider a lot of the classic Belgian styles, especially, to be holy. Like, I would never describe it. I would never put the word lambic in any context on. Never.
Okay. Are you a guy who uses the lambic style? Or
no,
do you just stay away from it in general?
I mean, I kind of feel like you should be in patent land if you're going to call it lambic style. And I know we're being unfair to all the other beer styles that we're happy to steal from, and whatnot. But those are special beers, and they're very inspirational for us. And we feel like that is sort of set aside and special. Mm-hmm. So we wouldn't, we just call it our Imperial Red.
Okay.
Sour.
Is there a generic term for American style sour beer other than just American style sour? There's other categories, aren't there? How about like American tart? Like,
well, yeah.
Go all the way from Goza to.
Yeah, I mean, this is like something brewers. This is, I feel like, something brewers love to argue about right now. There was at the Craft Brewers Conference. There was actually a panel talking about this, where I got up and everyone yelled at me. But
must have been out of tomatoes.
Yeah. It's I think people get really hung up on the term sour for describing the beer category. I like it. I understand the reason people don't like it is they think it's derivative. It boils everything down. It boils everything down to just one flavor profile, when in fact the beer styles, you know, represent so much more.
But the hummus sour intensity itself is a big variability, right?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess my point is I really have no problem with calling a Brett beer a sour. That I would fold that even though it's not acidic, you can call in that sour category. And the reason is that people buy beers that say sour on the label. And our goal is to get more handmade craft, you know, sour beer into people's faces and get them to try it. And so I'll call it anything on the label except Lambic that you know, gets people to try it.
I get it. Sure.
So it doesn't bother – the name sour doesn't bother me for the category.
Right. I'm sort of thinking more from a style description.
Yeah.
Enter a category kind
of thing. All of our Brett beers are mixed fermentation anyway for the most part.
Right.
Okay. Is that something you want to push, Tasty? You want to try to let's start a movement. Let's start a fucking hashtag up in this piece.
The indie tart style.
Yeah.
Independent tart brewery. Yeah.
Well, when people say tart, usually their tart's a euphemism for something else. You know, I mean, all of the beers we're talking, you know, all of our beers, these are all soured the slow way in the barrel. We don't do any kettle souring process or anything like that. And usually when people say tart, they're implying in some way that it's either a kettle sour or something else.
But to me, that's the low end of sour.
Sure.
It's tart. That could be derived, you know, in the kettle, or it could be derived in the barrel.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm just saying that's just a starting point. Yes, typically those are all kettle sours that are tart.
Ugh. You know, your question about the, you know, is like, is there a name for American sours and stuff like that? I really like what Russian River is dealing with, like the Sinambic or the spontaneous, it's like an homage to, you know, to Lambic without directly copying that name, you know. Everyone gets where the riff's from, but I really like that technique.
So what would you call your...
We don't have a county that's easy enough to you know, make a cool rhyme yet.
Take an interesting place, like, you know, Tenderloin-y Lambic. Yeah. Tender Lambic.
Yeah. Tender Lambic.
Yeah. Did you guys start down there? I don't know. I'm just kidding.
We need to do some ideation sessions on the name, for sure.
Mission Hillock.
I don't know. Dog Patchpick.
That rolls off the fucking tongue.
You're
almost
welcome.
As good as Geraniol.
Trademark that.
That's exactly how you say it.
Phil's going to be like, I can't work for this brewery anymore if you guys are going to start messing. Okay.
So have you guys ever done... I'm sorry. You want to go somewhere?
I was going to move on to the next
I just want to ask him, did you guys ever do a wild fermentation?
Spontaneous fermentation? Yeah. We have...
Come on,
Tasty. Just make sure we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah.
We have not. Although it's certainly on our list. Yes. We're going to get there. We've done it at other people's breweries is what we tend to do.
You haven't done it on purpose.
We did a cool ship trip with Arizona Wilderness Boys, which was really fun.
What's that?
Road trip with people.
Yeah, so the Arizona
camping brewing trip.
Yeah.
I think I remember seeing some fun in this. Go ahead.
The folks down in Arizona Wilderness hosted a trip, and they invited about 20 breweries out to it. And the idea was we go camping. So we brew a turbid mash, you know, Lambic-inspired wort, aged hops, and then... we pump it into a barrels at, you know, boiling temps. We don't chill it, and we drive it up to the mountain, and then we pump it into a very small mobile cool ship that was built in the back of the truck.
Okay, all right.
We leave it out overnight. We drink a lot of whiskey and port.
Port a lot, you know.
Once the beer's gone. And the next morning, we rack it back into barrels, and that's going to ferment out in their brewery. And the idea is that we're going to do this around the country. I think this idea, every brewery that was involved and other breweries can take this idea and... do a spontaneous, you know, where you're at and
sure.
Figure out the flavors. You know, maybe the beer will never come to fruition. Maybe what comes out of it never is, you know, will never be
drinkable.
Right. No, absolutely. But, you know, there was so much of this trip that was based on just talking about, you know, beer and just getting to know all the people you work with as peers that, you know, really I'm a fanboy of. I trade for their beers, right? And it's really cool to kind of get that perspective where we're just kind of sitting around a campfire and talking about our craft. And it's all tied to this one project of spontaneous fermentation.
And drinking whiskey and port.
Together? Sherry, I think, is what Jeffers brought, yeah.
Wait a minute, so how long? Turbid mash must have got you pretty drunk. That's like 8 hours, isn't it?
You know, I got to be honest and give credit where credit's due. The brewer that came in that morning came in much earlier than everybody else. Yeah.
Wow.
He got it started much earlier.
Good. Sure. That would have been a drunk fest.
Yeah, no.
Oh my
we
God.
Started the night before, so he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kidding me? It'd be crazy.
It takes a long time.
Yeah.
We've done some no-pitch stuff, though, where we're really happy with the results, and we want to continue and sort of investigate further, which is just knocking out wort into barrels that we're super happy with.
Oh, yeah.
We'll clean them, and the wood, whatever's in the wood is kind of going to get, you know, ferment out for us.
But I don't like when people call that spontaneous.
That's not spontaneous.
No, that's not spontaneous. No, well, I guess not, right? Yeah, yeah, because there's... Because you put the bugs in there.
Just because the pitch is in the wood doesn't mean the pitch ain't there.
I mean, I feel like this is my traditionalist speaking, but no pit. When you say spontaneous, you have to mean cool ship.
Absolutely.
Like that, that you really need to mean cool ship.
Not even like a bucket.
I mean, I'll allow a small bucket. How big of a bucket? I don't know.
We need to work this out.
To me, spontaneous means it's inoculant from the air, ambient air.
Yeah.
Anything else is a small pitch.
Is you put it there, regardless of how small it is.
Just because there's five cells doesn't mean you didn't pitch it.
Yeah. Right.
I never thought about this. As a homebrewer, you could just, like, you know, oxygenate your wort with just ambient air, right? Wouldn't be that same thing?
Blow bubbles.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically what everybody does, every homebrewer in the world, until they get a thing, right?
There's a little device
you can get to.
I've done it.
You've actually done the...
How'd it turn out?
It turned pretty good. Yeah. I mean, we let...
Tell the microphone, though, pal. Pull it towards you.
Yeah.
Here, don't be afraid of it. Not that close.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right, good?
No, I'm fucking with you. Go ahead.
It turned out pretty good. I mean, we let it sit for a year, and then we pitched raspberries on top of it, and then we let it sit for another 4 or 6 months, but... At the end of it, it was a pretty good sour-style beer that just got garage air from Orange County. You know, musty garage sea air from Orange County.
There you go. Some of that air was probably in Disneyland, so it's okay.
And some of it was smog from China.
Well, what I think, spontaneous fermentation is one of the most interesting ways to... We were talking about that idea of terroir. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one of the best ways to bring a sense of terroir. So what, you know, we call lambic and goose, that is the patent land, you know, that sort of... It's really suburbs south of Brussels, basically. You know, that region, that is lambic, and that is their terroir at play there. But I think as we see other breweries around, like Allagash is playing around with this, Chester King's playing around with this. Obviously, we've got like Beatification. Mm-hmm. You know, those are really, really cool, interesting expressions of literally the flora in the air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can work out for sure.
There's a safer version of a brewery I'm really excited about in Philly called Forest and Main. And what they do is they harvest yeast from wildflowers in the spring around their brewery off of trees, you know, blossoms. And that's their pitch for the entire year for their saison. So it's not truly spontaneous because they grow it up from that pitch. But that's the way they get it. It's an ambient yeast that's just present in the air. I feel like that's a nice hybrid that, you know, it's kind of safe. And homebrewers can do this all the time. You can take wort. I would recommend pre-acidifying it if you're going to try and capture something from the air around you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For safety.
And it's just actually for growth. I mean, a lot of these microbes are you know, involved in fruit, you know, like breaking down fruit and rotten fruit, right? That's how they live naturally. So acids get produced, so they're happier with it's a tiny bit of acidity anyway. So pre-acidifying your wort and trying to capture something in the wild, you know, the way that they're doing it, I think it's a cool idea. Just grow it up. If it tastes great, you know, use it again. If it doesn't, try it again. Yeah. Maybe another time, another plant, another flower.
Yeah.
I mean, okay.
Go out 10 different times, 10 different places.
Yeah.
Which one like the best?
How would you pre-acidify your wort?
So there is the technique of sour kettling.
Drop some phosphoric acid. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's, if you're just trying to grow something and not drink it, you're talking about a 1 liter flask of wort, you know, you're going to try and, you know, inoculate.
And what pH would be?
So, I mean, the food grade safe is anything below 4.4 is not going to kill you. So, I mean, that typically tends to be like fermented beer. We're not talking about like a large amount of acid, but you can add food grade, citric, lactic, phosphoric, anything that's food grade. And just bring that wort below, you know, 4.4, 4.3, something like that, where, you know, nothing that can grow can hurt you. There's something about spontaneous beer that no one ever talks about, and I don't think there's a documented case, but, you know, if the beer doesn't ferment in time and it's sitting out there ambient, you could have some enteric bacteria produce some toxins. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a possibility there. Yeah. So as a homebrewer, I think it'd be safe to pre-acidify your wort.
Yeah.
Acidify.
Those are available at most homebrew supply stores.
Yes.
Acidify it for growth.
Yeah.
For growth and just for your own safety.
For life.
You know what else helps with the growth and safety and life?
What?
Warren? Adam and Eve.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can check out this latest deal from Adam and Eve when you use coupon code BNARMY, not Jamil, as my copy suggests. You get 50% off almost any one item, 3 free DVDs, something called a free Power O vibrating ring. In case you didn't need help, guys.
The power's free? What part's free?
I don't know. I think the Power O vibrating ring is free.
Oh, it's the whole thing.
It's its own. You get a lot of things for free.
Wow, that's so many things.
Have you not learned this from Adam and Eve, dude? They give you tons of free stuff.
Wow.
Like a free Power O.
Free Power O.
Well, yeah. You know what? I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't come already with a fucking battery in it.
What?
I mean, everything shipped with the battery these days, right?
Free battery.
Well, but do they have to? It's free packaging, too. Free plastic around the... Anyway, and with free shipping, just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a piece of lingerie for, you know, for growth, or anything you desire. Just enter code BNARMY at checkout. And that's don't forget, you'll get 50% off almost any item, 3 free DVDs, a Power O vibrating ring for free. I had to clarify that for Warren. And free shipping, AdamandEve.com, everybody.
Don't read it again.
No, we'll never read that again. Let's check out the... the Blondale. No, I don't need it. I just needed to... I just thought I was losing my mind for a second.
I drank mine and needed more.
Let's talk about this. Now, this is brewed with the Muscat grapes and apricots.
Yep. I love Muscat wine. I really, really like Muscat. It's got that sort of lychee, tropical, floral character to it.
I mean, the aroma in this is amazing. I want to buy it as a perfume for my wife.
I think it has kind of like a real sort of noyau, which is the French name for the bitter almond pit. So think like marzipan almond kind of character. Mm. I really get that kind of coming through on the nose here.
Wow. And those apricots come through right at the end, man. Yeah, this is great.
Thank you very much.
This is my favorite. I like this one more. I'm going to be honest with you.
I like the last one, but whatever.
That's the liability.
We'll fight later. We'll fight in the parking lot. It's fine.
Thumb wrestle.
I feel like when you do two, there's always going to be a favorite.
So. There has to be, right? That's just the way we are.
Which is your favorite twin? Be honest.
Now, would you reach for red wine or white wine normally if you're in drink wine?
You know, it's been shifting a lot towards white wine more.
There we go.
I am a big red wine fan. But I just joined my first wine club, so, you know, I know a little bit about wine. I just want to point that out.
Well, I rarely drink a wine.
Yeah.
So I'm not dialing into the wine character in the beer. I'm just getting, you know, just a general
I've never had muscat.
That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
Just an enjoyable fruity beer.
Yeah. Yeah. And with some oak character.
I get the muscat. I get a little bit of Sauv Blanc, too, honestly.
Mm-hmm. You're a wine drinker.
Yeah.
Yeah, I am.
The beer drinkers. Why aren't you a
wine drinker, Tasty? Come on. What's wrong with you? Well,
you know, it's a higher ABV than I drink at. And,
that's true.
Wine, red wine especially, gives me acid reflux, which I don't get from sour beer. But red wine tends to bother me.
Does your red beer give you acid reflux?
I wasn't having any problems tonight, so.
We'll see in about 2 hours.
That was great, yeah. We're still on the air, though.
It's been by minute here.
This is fantastic. I like it. This is just a very refreshing.
It's a wonderful beer.
It's scary that it's 10.6, whatever it is. There you go. I got cheersed. It's scary. I want to drink more, and I don't drink a lot of ABV, high ABV stuff, except for, like, wine.
We've been cracking them, you know, just kind of tasting them, you know, every week to see how they're going and progressing and, you know, how's it aging out well. And it's definitely a scary thing to open before you leave. And before you have to do anything, like, important, you're like, oh, man, this is way bigger than I imagined it would be. But it doesn't drink that way at all.
I got to meet the mayor.
Yeah.
It really hides the alcohol. It's not there at all.
What's changing?
I'm feeling it, but I couldn't taste it.
Yeah, no, there's no way.
So it's bone dry.
If you told me it was like 8%, I'd be like, oh, sure, okay, great.
You know, I think it's a lot of it's just the bone dry, but how much fruit's really in there?
Yeah.
You won't believe me, but there is thousands of pounds of apricots in there, and I think that's kind of breaking up, you know, sort of that that ABV.
Wow. Yeah, that's a good beer. So how is that changing from week to week when you said you're cracking bottles?
So a lot of bottle condition things or barrel aged things, they suffer from I believe it's from lacto, but there's a bottle shock. They call it Cheerio or something like that, right? It's a I think it's tetrahydropyridine is the chemical we think it is.
Yeah,
That happens with oxidation and lactobacillus, and Brett's really good at cleaning it up. So a lot of times when barrel, you know, sour beers are packaged young, or if they're only force carved, things like that, exclusively, they'll have this flavor that it's kind of mousy, kind of Cheerio flavor.
It's like grape nuts, like after you swallow, you know, is how I always think of it.
And so that's something that we're always kind of looking out for. I think it is a flaw. You know, it's a flaw to me personally. Some people actually like it, so it's whatever. You know, if you like it. Whatever, you drink what you like.
Yeah.
So we're looking at that. We're looking at the total carbonation of the bottle. And then there's just something that's kind of like an off-putting sulfury sort of poopiness that comes about, you know, racking all these barrels together. And they kind of throw themselves out. And then going, you know, it's a very kind of aggressive transfer that we have to do, you know, the volume that we're transferring over and just the nature of how we do it, that these barrels really just want to be left with no oxygen ever touching them, the mm-hmm. beer, and the transfer process just brings in a little bit of oxygen, and it takes a while for it to kind of figure itself out again.
Okay.
You taste the blend, and then you taste the bottle, and you're disappointed, and then you wait for the bottle to sit for 3 weeks, and you're happy again.
Does it line kind of back up with the blend for the most part, or is there a change that's permanent that you can kind of count on?
I think there's some highlights that get lost. You know, there's the fruit's always brightest when it's youngest, mm-hmm. and as it ages out, the fruit kind of changes, and some of it, you know, might become other flavors, but some of it just kind of drops off. I think for us, it's really just looking for that those off flavors that we think associated with the transfer process to go away. You know, that Cheerio flavor, that sort of things just kind of taste muddled when they're young,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
and you know, let them sit for a few weeks and just figure themselves out in a good way. Brett has a habit of wiping its own butt.
Almanac. Brett has a way of wiping its own butt.
That's a t-shirt.
Yes.
Well, I think the beer, you know, the beer is alive, you know, and I think that's what we're, you know, and how the beer gets treated. And this is so true, especially with like a lot of the new IPAs we're seeing, where that level of coddling, you know, brings out that little bit extra. And so for, you know, the barrels have really sort of settled out and stabilized. But then when you empty all of these barrels back together again, these living things are now interacting, and you've basically made something new,
yeah.
You know, especially when you're blending like a large number of barrels. You know, we've got over 100 barrels will be blended into this.
Wow.
And so when we put that together, you know, that needs time to kind of sort itself out and settle back down. And again, that coddling. And so it's that opportunity to let it sort of become its sort of true self and figure itself out. And, you know, the advantage of, you know, with a lot of the sour and barrel aging is that time heals all wounds with these beers. And so we put them together and things get a little sort of wacky, mm-hmm. and then we package it and it sort of settles back down again.
Okay. Very cool.
I mean, there's some things that time will never heal for sure.
Right.
But those go down the drain. Yeah.
Just like life.
Just like lost love.
Sometimes your life goes down the drain. Or portions of it.
I'll never forget. Brett wipes its own ass.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
I wasn't sure I could say ass. I was like,
you can fucking say whatever you
friendly.
Want.
Yeah. Was,
sure.
Like, kids don't homebrew, do they?
Talk about it as,
no.
You can talk about it as a sexual organ if you like. This is pretty wide open here.
What? Anus?
Brett wipes its own ass and anus. Yeah.
We can talk about. We can talk about the butt as its own sexual organ if you want.
We have a new beer name.
Sexual
organ?
I think Tasty can keep that one.
That might be a homebrew thing, but you can never get that.
You'll never get TPD approval.
No, tasting room only kind of thing.
Yeah, sure.
That's when you can sell the back of your car for sure.
It would be the most appropriate place to sell it, I feel like.
Right.
Yeah. Well, guys, we're going to let you go. I appreciate the beers and the time. I think everything was tasting really great.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks for having us.
And I appreciate the scoop on the beers. We get denied scoops all the time. That asshole Mitch Steele promised me. He goes, I'll tell you guys when we'll come on the show and I'll tell you where we're opening the new brewery. Facebook. Fucker.
He didn't say how he was going to tell you.
That's true. That's true. But this has been really cool. I really appreciate it.
Cheers. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Where can our listeners learn more about your beers?
You can find us online at almanacbeer.com. We're on Instagram, probably the best way to follow us.
Okay.
At almanacbeer. We're on Twitter. We're on Facebook. I feel like those are all the ways to find us.
Okay. Very good. And you guys are you guys nationwide or in select states, or is that information on the website too?
We're in about 15 states, so you can find us all over the West Coast.
You're in Maine recently? Or
I don't believe we're in Maine yet. No, we're in New York. We're in Boston. We're in Philly.
Vermont.
Maybe it was Vermont.
Wisconsin, Denver, Chicago area. Just launched Michigan.
Arizona.
Massachusetts.
Yeah, we have a tasting room opening this fall in San Francisco. That's opening on 24th Street in the Mission.
Okay.
So we'll be open this one right before the end of the year is the idea. So,
okay, so April next year, something like that?
No, we're really serious about it. We're going to get it open. But
okay, cool,
we've never had a tasting room. This is our first tasting room. So we're incredibly excited to be able to share it with all of you.
And that's off the brewery site?
Yes.
Off site?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So it's like a little bar kind of thing.
Yeah, a little dedicated tasting room. We'll have a full kitchen as well.
A full kitchen?
Oh, cool. Nice. Yeah. Wow. Do you have to call it a tasting room? There's eight questions involved in that, I guess. Are you going to have just your own beers or just our guest beers too?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't know yet.
I think the detailed, boring, wonky answer is we'll have the ability to serve guest beers, but we can fill all those handles. No problem.
Totally. Yeah. So, yeah. And I guess that was the second part is like, do you have to call it a tasting room or are you know?
I think we're
like
allowed to call it whatever we want. We can call whatever we want.
Okay. So. Okay. That's cool.
And we're going to call it, the official name is Almanac San Francisco.
Okay. Very cool. I'm stoked about it.
Me too.
Please let us know when it happens. We'll come down there.
You will be the first to know.
Tasty found a picture of this dude with beer spelled in his beard. It's a beard.
Oh, that's from JBF.
Yeah.
I saw him walking around. There was more pretzel crumbs in it when I
saw it. I have like no urge to touch that at all.
No. Here, Warren, check that out. Let's try to do something with you.
Come on, Warren. You can beat that shit. Ugh. Yeah. I have no desire to do that.
But it looks, it looks better than I thought it would. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. You wouldn't let that guy wear your beer t-shirt, would you?
No, he doesn't get one.
Yeah. He doesn't get one. All right, we're going to let you guys go. We're going to take a break here, and we're going to come back. We're going to talk a little bit about GABF. We're going to talk with Sully coming off his big GABF win, and just a little bit about how beer judging works on the professional side. It's The Session. It's not Dr. Homebrew. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Brewcasters. The Brewing Network. With over 20 years of experience making world-class craft beer and more than 100 gold medals in international competitions, Moylan's Brewing Company is not just a pretty face in craft beer. Just ask Brendan Moylan.
What do we got here? The beer of the hour. Moylan's, gotta love that big M. It's like a sign of awesomeness. It's got an extra kick to it. Let's pour this bad boy. Oh, Moylan's. At the end of the night when the kids are finally in bed, the wife's in bed, nobody's bothering your ass anymore, that's Moylan's time. Moylan's is for you.
Yeah!
It's to help you out.
Yeah.
It helps me out.
What?
Well, because it's freaking awesome. Northern California brewed. It's brewed with love.
With love?
Oh, yeah. Tremendous. And it's always best where?
Moylan's.
You gotta try it on tap at Moylan's in Novato. They're freaking awesome. Not only because I own the brewery, because I love the beer.
Cheers.
Boom.
Kilt Lifter Scotch Ale takes big beers to a whole new level with rich malt balanced perfectly with delicate hops and now comes in four pack tall boy cans so you can take the party on the go. Or come to the brewery, take a tour, and try any of Moylan's fresh creations right from the source. Check them out at Moylan's.com.
Your support of the Brewing Network means everything to us. We couldn't produce shows without you. And we love giving you something extra for that support, like Brew Your Own magazine. You already know it's a great brewing magazine full of recipes, equipment how-tos, discussions of beer styles, and brewing techniques. Whether you're new to brewing and just starting out or you're an old pro, you'll always learn something from the articles in Brew Your Own. Plus, they're amazing special issues like plans for building a Brutus 10 system, 250 classic clone recipes, and the Homebrewer's Answer Book. Brew Your Own magazine and BYO.com are awesome resources for any brewer, whether for yourself or as a gift. When you subscribe or resubscribe from the Brewing Network homepage, you directly support programs like this. Get a great magazine and support the Brewing Network. Subscribe to Brew Your Own right from the brewingnetwork.com.
Hey there, BN.
Man Army, have you heard the latest at Hop Tech? Since Hop Tech has doubled in size after a huge expansion, Jade and Roberto can stock even more of the best quality homebrewing supplies and equipment. Over 60 kick-ass varieties of hops and malts, monster truckloads of quality brewer's yeast, including White Labs, Y yeast, and multiple dry yeasts. They even have all grain systems from Grainfathers and Ruby Street Brew Systems, thanks to Jade, the brand new all-grain brewer. And don't forget about their 10% discount to all BN Army members. Jade and Roberto are waiting for you and all of your brewing questions over at hoptech.com. HopTech, totally not sucking since 1983.
Hey guys, what'll it be?
I'm not sure. What do you recommend?
A lot of people seem to like the Hefeweizen.
Is that a German Hefeweizen or more of an American-style wheat beer?
I'm not sure, but I can give you a taste.
Okay, great.
Great.
The Cicerone Certification Program certifies and educates beer professionals in order to elevate the beer experience for consumers. Unfortunately, not every bar is staffed with certified beer servers who can guide their customers through a beer list.
Here you go, guys. Let me know what you think of the Hefeweizen.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely more of an American wheat. But I can hardly tell because this beer just smells like sour butter. I wonder how long it's been since they cleaned the draft lines.
Yeah, and look at the bubbles on the side of the glass. It's filthy.
Somebody should tell these guys about the Cicerone program.
For sure. How about we head somewhere else for another beer?
Your server should give beer the same respect you do. Request quality. The Cicerone certification program offers 4 levels of beer certification, in-person classes, and course books for beer professionals. Check them out at Cicerone.org. The Cicerone Certification Program. We know beer.
Hey, my brewing brothers and sisters. This is Jamel Zainashev, and I want to tell you about Heretic Evil Twin. You might be familiar with my homebrew recipe, which uses massive late hopping to create a balance between the malty sweet and the hoppy bitter, along with an outrageous malt and hop character. I wanted a beer with the same bold hop and malt character, so we played around with the homebrew recipe until we were able to make a great commercial version, too. We've created a beer rich in malt character, full of caramel, toast, biscuit, and an ever-so-subtle roast note. On top of that, we piled in an insane amount of Citra and Columbus hops at the end of the boil, as well as in dry hopping. This damn-the-cost approach to hopping gives Heretic's Evil Twin a great blast of citrus and tropical fruit that can't be matched by any other hop. The result is a bold, malty, hoppy, but easy-drinking beer. This is our top seller, our flagship beer, and I couldn't be prouder of it. Cheers.
To find Heretic beers near you, click on Find Some at hereticbrewing.com.
You're listening to the Brewing Network. Because like beer, radio shouldn't suck.
All right, thanks for hanging out, everybody.
You're welcome.
Got a couple more things to cover, and then we can get out of here, which I'm excited
tacos.
About. Fucking tacos. It's taco night. It's Taco Monday. I feel like
is that the day of the week that it normally is?
No, it's Tuesday or whatever, but like, why do tacos need a day? Why do you need an excuse to drink to eat tacos?
Well, I even wonder why it's not Taco Thursday. There's 2 days that it could have been.
Isn't it? Why can't it be both?
We should try Thursday. That out.
We have Taco Thursday near us. And Tuesday.
Well, look at you.
Yeah.
Southern California.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like you're closer to Mexico.
We are.
Yeah. So
significantly.
No, I don't know if you are for sure, but that's my feeling. Yeah.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Is his feeling right?
Who knows? I don't know if my feeling is right, but I'll tell you what is right. Beersmith. Using Beersmith, loving Beersmith, downloading Beersmith on your computer, getting a 21-day free trial from Beersmith.com. Brad at Beersmith is working hard to make sure that you have the latest up-to-date information on all the stuff that you need, all the little gadgets and gizmos and fine-tuning, all the information that you need to really keep track of your beer and make consistent beer and make good beer. And also, let's be honest, have fun. Have fun brewing. Part of brewing is record keeping, and why wouldn't you use the best software you can to keep records and to create recipes? Beersmith.com, 21-day free trial, bruh. I mean, come on, it's not going to get cheaper than free, dude.
Right? I guess.
You don't agree with that statement?
Well, I mean, he could pay you, but that's not really cheaper.
Yeah, it's so, not, yeah, it's not like it, you wouldn't say, yeah, this cost me negative $10. Yeah,
it's the cheapest. I got paid for it.
But that you're in another realm. Well, you're always in another realm, I guess.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, I'm so meta. That's how you use that word, right?
You're in the upside down, dude. You should have been on Stranger Things.
Oh, I'm in Australia?
I don't think that is how you use that word.
I don't think it's how you use that word either.
Not.
I think it's how Warren uses that word.
I feel like minus, cheaper to the minus one. That's one thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Cheaper to the minus one.
Okay, so I didn't want to chat about GABF. Let me tell Sully just to call in now. Or now. Whatever.
Oh, Sully, yeah. I'd love to talk to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be stoked. So real quick, you know, like every year, the Brewing Network broadcasts the awards at GABF, and, you know, it's too late. You missed it. But actually, Bev, I bet you could go back on live stream and watch them again.
Yes.
You absolutely can.
Okay, yeah. So if you didn't watch it, I mean, it's a cool thing to do, man.
If you
watch
won
how
and you weren't
stoked.
There, you could see your name announced.
Yeah.
Right.
Of course you should go look at it. Yeah.
Get
fuckers.
A screen grab, dude.
Yes. Yeah.
It's really cool to
throws
see.
Throws a slide of your, not your thing here. It's great.
Yeah. It's really cool to see, like, why is it so loud? What's wrong, Beverly?
It's just really loud out
it
there,
is.
And I don't know.
I know.
You get a lot of ambient.
Because
I'll be back.
We live next door to a bar.
We're in a bar.
No. The door is shut. Check twice.
Anyway, it's cool to see, like, you know, people that you know or, you know, beers that
yeah,
you,
look
you,
them
you
up.
Drink.
You could
like,
fast forward.
Thing,
you could look at the category numbers, and you could fast forward to the ones that they won. See him walk up on the stage, get the picture taken.
Yeah.
Cool shit.
It's cool stuff, man. So we had, you know, of course, a few friends win. And, of course, like an idiot, I closed the window that I was using to, like, make all these notes.
Sure.
But anyway.
There's like 8,000 entries this year.
That's huge,
and,
dude.
There's only like 270 winners, so.
See, and I was wondering about this, like, you know, is this going to get harder as we get more and more breweries in the world?
Harder to win or harder to even compete?
I'll just grab Sully. Harder to win. Because, you know, like, there's, well, I don't know. The categories, I'm sure they cap out entries. Do they cap out entries at GBF?
Yeah, they do. They see how many people want to enter.
Yeah.
And then they pick that number, apply some math towards the number of judges that could be available.
Okay.
And then they come up with the number. And this year it was five entries per brewery.
Sully, is that right? Do they cap entries for GABF?
I don't know about anybody else, but I entered 100 beers. No.
In the cream ale category.
In 90 category.
We were Tasty's right. It's five entries per brewery and we actually technically have two locations, so we entered 10 beers this year.
But so do they have a limit on how many beers or how many breweries? Oh, overall, our entering. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, as we get more and more breweries in the world, in the country, are they going to be entering more and more beers into GABF, and are just the categories going to be growing and growing? So to get a gold means, you know, so much more than it did 10 years ago. And you think in 10 years from now, it's going to be like, wow, that's like the rarest thing.
Well, I don't have my crystal ball with me, so I can't predict the future yet.
I specifically asked you to bring
it. Big parables.
But there were supposedly 18 tables judging, let's say, the IPA category, which had some like 300-plus entries in that.
Wow.
Yeah. Half the judges.
Half the judges, exactly.
Round.
And it was just, you know, it's, and, you know, we ended a couple beers in that. It was like, you know, trying to win the lottery. but, you know, you're right. You hit the nail right on the head. I mean, right now to win that category is a lot harder than it ever has been.
Well, speaking of winning, El Sully, which is my new favorite 2-1-A beer, debuted at my wedding. I'm just going to be honest. You got gold in the, what is it, with the American Lager category or no, American Cream Ale or whatever it was?
Yeah, American Category 38 American Style Cream Ale, of which there were 65 entries.
Wow.
And we beat Pabst Old Style Lager.
I saw that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. But no, it was great. I mean, yeah, there was also some chatter online about like, oh my God, he entered a lager in this American Style Cream Ale category. But you know, you've got a lot of listeners who are avid home brewers, and they probably understand that, you know, that particular category actually allows for, it's a pre-prohibition style and allows for mixed yeast strains. So you can use an ale or a lager strain, and actually, you know what? It's interesting because it is hard to win medals this time. So you have to really, engineer or really dive in deep on these descriptors of you know what these categories are, what they say, what the stats are. You can't be willy-nilly and just say because you have an IPA, you're going to end in the IPA category. You have to really read it. So that's what I did with this. I actually realized that I couldn't enter it. Like, let's say there's another category called American Style or International Style Pilsner. And if you just read the descriptor of it, it doesn't allow for fruity aromas, which this beer has. We're using the WLP 940 yeast, the Mexican ale strain from White Labs, and it produces an herbal fruity note. And the other thing is the chill haze. So this my beer has a slight chill haze. So it's really just trying to find the right spot for it. And when, you know, I've been judging for 7 years now, so in a lot of ways it's been great for me because I can, you know, I know that the judges are looking right at that description of, you know, those 96 categories and judging against that. So,
had you judged this category in years past?
You know, I don't think I have. I don't think I have judged it. You know, and as you know, you can't judge the category you're entering your beer in. No, I don't think I have it. I just was thinking back on this, actually on this trip, where I saw Tasty there as well. It was good hanging out with you, my friend. When I was at Steelhead Brewing Company down at Fisherman's Wharf, I used to make a pre-pro style, which is essentially what American Style Cream Ale is.
Okay.
So
very cool, man.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I did not, you know, I the way I look at these things is I go there, and if we win, it's fun. I'm not like Roger Davis from Faction, who back in the day, you know, he'd be on suicide watch. He'd have to remove his belt, his shoelaces when they were announcing the winners because he didn't win. He's out in traffic or something.
I don't want to see him after that.
So I.
It's fine.
Yeah, here, look at my butt.
And Sully, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want to, like, you know, redo it, but in the judging for the competition, the JBF, you're saying that they pay a lot of attention to style. You've judged with homebrewers, and you know, who pays more attention to style, the commercial guys or the homebrewers?
You're talking about as brewers go?
Yeah, in terms of judging beer. Who's paying more attention to the style guidelines, commercial or the homebrewers?
You know, I think it's a little bit different. I mean, Chris Swerzy, who's the competition director, you know, he gets up there every Tuesday, you know, night. We have the judge orientation, and so he's really specific that you need to judge to what it says on the paper. So a lot of times you'll have other outside influences will eke into conversations, and you have to have that reminder all the time at the table. So you sometimes will have BJCP judges who will, like, make a comment about the BJCP, let's say, version of a category, and then you have to kind of go, hey, whoa, hey, buddy. And then you'll have professional brewers who sometimes will say, well, my Vienna Lager, and you're like, whoa, I don't even know what your Vienna Lager is, you know.
I'm
judging these here. So, I think that you also get beer home brewers or professional brewers. You have people in the trade. You have writers, you know, journalists and all that. So you get a real good cross-section.
Any podcasters?
And podcasters.
Really? Who are they? I've never heard of them.
You know, I don't think I've ever judged with a podcaster, actually.
Exactly. That's my
Danny
point.
Isn't Danny Kahn a judge?
Yeah.
He does a podcast.
Shut up, Beverly.
Look how smart I am.
I saw Bev there, too, and Sam, by the way, working the BN booth. So
Sam was our stock boy.
What was Sam doing? Oh, stock.
We called him Stock Boy. He was
Stock Boy.
We loved Stock Boy. He was a champion.
Yeah, he was standing there with his trucker hat on backwards and playing the part. He's doing a good job. It was good to see him. It's been a while.
That's great. Well, it sounds like judging went well. It sounds like there were a ton of beer judges, though.
Yeah, there was 200 plus judges.
My God.
It's great. You get, you know, it's like this little fraternal organization where you you know, you all get together and you see the same people every year. And you know, I think it's made me a better brewer, actually, because you start honing in on, like, what And if you want to hunt, if you want to be a medal hunter, if you want to try to win medals, that's what you do when you enter. You want to do when you enter these beers, you become a better brewer. I knew that three of the beers I entered, they had no chance. I just, you know, people, and it was almost like, you know, I had a couple of guys with me from the 21st Amendment, Ted Whitney, who's our sales director, and then Rob Baer, who's our national sales manager. And Rob was turning to me like a little kid because we had just won like the gold for El Sully, and we're sitting there in the audience there. And he goes, "Well, what other ones do you think are gonna do well? Do you have any others you think you're gonna win?" And I knew full well that maybe that we had a chance on one because I tasted the beers before we left. And looked at the descriptors, it's kind of a tradition I do. And I just—it's almost like I was telling him he wasn't gonna live, like he had cancer or something. Like that. Now, you're gonna make it, little buddy. You're gonna be okay. We're gonna win today. And knowing full well we weren't gonna make it. That's probably a terrible example of that. But,
yeah, probably. But that's all right. It fits.
But it's a fun. It's a, you know, I urge everybody to go out and see this thing. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, it's bigger than it ever has been. You know, they've expanded it. Some areas at the convention center, they have these little value added things where you can meet brewers. They have tasting events. You know, I knew that the GABF had really kind of had arrived, I guess you could say, when, you know, about 5 years ago, you saw scalpers out front, like professional scalpers, yeah. You know, selling tickets because this thing sells out every year. So.
But not this year, or
no, it sold out. It was sold out this year. Yeah.
No, but I mean, it sounded like they had like killed the scalper market because you're right. There were, you know, need a ticket, need a ticket. But I guess that just will never end.
No, it won't.
All right. Well, I appreciate the you know, the comments, Sully, and congrats on the gold, bro.
Yeah, you know, it's never expected when it happens. It's always like, hey, that's kind of fun. I get to bump Charlie Papazian's fist,
his frail hand.
And then when I was up on stage, I did a little shout out to the San Francisco Giants.
I heard that. Good job.
Yeah.
I'm sure they need the PR.
How are they doing?
You know, actually, I was watching the game a little earlier, and I think it's 3-2 right now, though. I don't know what it is this second, so.
Well, it's still preseason, so they still got a ways to go, I'm sure.
Some guy doesn't give a shit.
Yeah, no, he doesn't. That's
anytime.
Okay.
That's all right. No, is it playoffs, or I don't know? I honestly don't know. I really don't.
It is postseason, yes.
It's the playoffs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That explains the noise. Okay. Anyway, Sully, thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, it's great talking to you guys.
Yeah,
the
you
show
too.
Sounds great tonight, and I'll hopefully see you all soon.
Okay. Thanks, man.
All right. Bye-bye.
He's not listening. Come on.
No.
Come
that's
on,
why,
Sully.
That's why it sounds great.
He's like, the show sounds great, and whatever.
Go
anyway, so a few other people who won, a few friends of the show. Society won a bronze, an American-style stout with something called the Vulcanist. Volcanist? I don't know. Beachwood Blendery, our friend Julian over at Beachwood Brewing in Long Beach, you know, they have the sour program now, which I thought was interesting because they've been around for like 6 months or something like that.
The Blendery?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really? I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they're relatively brand new, so they won a silver in Belgian-style lambic or sour ale. Still don't know what it was.
Either one.
Yeah. Bagby Beer won with their Bow Pills, a sweet ride. I didn't note the metal.
My favorite beer.
That was such a good beer, man. That's why
they
I bring it up, right?
Ales for ALS here at Faction.
Yeah.
I just fell in love with that beer.
It's such a good beer, man.
Yeah.
Such a good beer.
The Bow Pills was great.
Of course, Sven at Kinetic in Lancaster, he won bronze for their chocolate beer, their fourth in the chocolate beer category.
There you go, Sven.
For his fourth anniversary beer.
Nice.
Flat Tail, of course. Handsome Dave.
Yeah, Dave.
Damn Wild is the beer. You won a bronze and mixed Brett beer. Our friends at Chuck and Nut, they won gold for Hellas.
Yeah.
Of course, and then Firestone won gold for Double Barrel Ale for their ordinary special in the ordinary special bitter category, and of course Heretic Brewing Company, Shallow Grave Silver,
nice
robust porter category.
Nice.
I don't know. I just wanted to take some time and acknowledge these folks that have been all nice to us over the years. So, and there's you know, look, there's more. I know like Fieldwork won, a beer, and
Central Coast won.
Iron Springs won a beer.
Yeah. There was tons of people.
Arnie at Marin won.
Arnie won.
No, really? I looked at this stupid list three times, and I missed that.
I think Noble picked something up, too.
Noble did, yeah.
Right, yeah.
That's pretty crazy. Well, the craziest thing, though, so I know at the GABF, they announced Fatheads in Philadelphia?
Ohio.
Ohio? Yeah, in Ohio, yeah, as Columbus. Winning medium-sized brewery of the year.
Yes.
And then I guess the BA called them the next day and was like, well, we actually made a mistake.
Whoops.
Oh, no.
So now Carl Strauss won that category. And so this is from Matt Cole, who we've talked to. He goes, it's very confusing. He explained that companies like his with multiple locations are required by the rules to compete at the level of their largest location. So even though the North Olmsted location of Fatheads is a large brew pub, it had to compete as a mid-sized brewing company, as did Fatheads Brewery in nearby Middleburg Heights, Ohio. Fatheads also has a brew pub in Portland, Oregon. Had he been able to enter North Olmsted as a large brew pub, as he tried to do, his medal hall would have made it GABF's large brew pub and brewer of the year. But that wasn't it. He says, all of us with the Great American Beer Festival and the Brewer Association deeply regret the error, the BA said, about the reassigning the mid... I like, that's a good word. Reassigning the mid-sized brewing company award.
So then was it Fathead's fault for checking the wrong box?
I don't know. This article says Mr. Cole said he will be talking to trade group officials about the issue on Monday and hopes to involve other breweries so such a situation doesn't happen. He says, I think I have a legitimate beef. So he sounds a little pissed in wanting each brewery or brew pub to be judged according to its actual size. I don't know. Like, and you know, forgive me. I tried to read the article, and I kind of didn't understand it. But it sounds like didn't understand it either. So,
You compete in the category of the smaller?
No, the largest format is the category.
So, like when Silly says he had 10 beers in the competition, he had 5 from his small outlet competing as a large. Is that right?
Well, so he got 10 entries, 5 for the pub, 5 for the production brewery.
But the pub competed as a large.
All of 21st Amendment's points would have gone towards competing in the large brewery category.
Well,
not
then they
got
10
category.
They got 10 chances to make points in that category.
I think part of it was...
Instead of 5 for a real, just a large brewery.
So they're saying apparently they had... misclassified itself as a brew pub instead of a brewing company.
Oh. Okay.
And I guess Matt is not stoked about that delineation.
He wants to be a brew pub,
I guess,
instead of a brewing company,
or maybe the other way around. I honestly don't know. It'd be cool to talk to him about it.
You know,
I just read this like an hour before the show, so I knew I wouldn't get.
You know, my on scene experience was that they didn't announce it the next day. They did it that night during the awards ceremony.
Oh, really?
So I'm sitting behind the.
They did.
The Carl Strauss people.
Yeah.
They'd won 4 medals, so they were up for a something of the year kind of thing. Size, medium, small, large. And the category that they thought they were in, they lost. And then then later on they named category maybe the same exact same one or something similar, and they won. They went up and got plaques. That's my...
I think
they might have caught it.
Oh, that's okay. That makes sense because I don't think Matt was there. I don't think he was at.
No, he wasn't there.
Yeah,
no,
so
his team went up to get the award.
But that's why the article said that he got the call.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, that's just my
being there experience.
Wow, yeah. I can't imagine that.
They were confused. Strauss, they got up and were like, "Wait a minute! I thought we lost. We won."
Yeah,
yeah.
So Carl Strauss went up on stage and
then they went
up their plaques
subsequently. Yeah, he met with a box of plaques. I don't know.
Wow.
Right in front of me.
Did they say Fatheads on the back?
Yeah, right.
We'll get to new shit later.
Yeah. Maybe they're empty boxes. I don't know.
Yeah, that would be amazing. That guy's really strong. Look, he's carrying 5 shit.
I don't know.
What?
What? It's 10 o'clock in the morning.
That's weird.
Got a hangover.
Speaking of having a hangover, homebrewers, are you in for a special treat? White Labs has been collecting yeast strains from all around the world for more than 20 years and keeping them locked away until now. Through the Vault program, you have an opportunity to order new, creative, and unique strains from White Labs that have rarely, if ever, been available on a commercial scale. Check out the full lineup of strains available by visiting whitelabs.com/vault and put your pre-order in today. Don't wait. Do not wait to do it. Unless you can't have 2 windows open, so finish this show and then do it. But otherwise, don't wait. Your order could push the next strain into production, which would be pretty cool. to do that one. Oh, speaking of White Labs, speaking of the, let's see, how do I segue this, Tasty?
What are we speaking of?
I don't know.
Speaking of GABF, which is put on by the Brewers Association, but is also owned the AHA thing too, right?
Yeah.
Did you guys use the Brew Guru app when you were out in GABF?
No.
You forgot?
The guy who had an expense card. I don't care what it costs.
So that you're like, fuck it, I don't need a 10% off wings.
Sure, you had the BN credit card. So fuck it.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, next time you go out and about, the Brew Guru app can do a tons for you. It's built for homebrewers and beer lovers. Brew Guru delivers sage brewing knowledge and money-saving deals at breweries, beer bars, and homebrew supply shops. The American Homebrewers Association designed this powerful mobile app to help homebrewers and craft beer lovers explore the wide world of beer that we all share. With Brew Guru, you can effortlessly find deals and save money on beer, food, and brewing supplies. Level up your brew IQ with handpicked articles, proven recipes, and trusted resources from the American Homebrewers Association and Zymergy Magazine. And use the powerful brewery locator to find nearby breweries, tap rooms, beer bars, homebrew supply shops, all that kind of stuff. Get the app today, and it's free for iPhone, iPad, Android. Learn more at homebrewersassociation.org. Basically, just hook that up with your AHA membership, man, and you're good to go.
That's great. It's cool when you're traveling, because you can turn it on. It'll send you, messages saying there's a discount near you.
Yeah. It's cool. You just push it right to your phone, man. It's crazy.
You click on it, and it brings up the discount, what you get, and it shows your membership card. You just show the server.
It's right there.
And here's the deal. You owe me 15%.
Right now. You owe me.
Right now.
You owe me this right now. Do it. All right. I think we're ready to go.
I think we're ready to leave.
Are we ready? Eat some tacos or something? Tacos are here, Ben?
Taco Monday.
You have to go get them?
All right. I'm pretty thirsty.
What are you going to have?
I'm going to have another of the Bagby Kolschs. They're really good.
That's what I had. And I think I might have to have another before I eat tacos and edit the show down. Do all that fun stuff. All right, let's get out of here. Thank you guys for sticking with me for the show. Thanks to Almanac for coming in.
Winning the race, JP does great as his charity can.